the one place where news, opinions, and entertainment are the way you like it. This is Rant EM Radio.
Wanna chat with the guys?
Frank Blink.
That's not how I wanted to announce that either.
This is Brooke's poem about what's going on.
Oh my god, because he's about to fucking read it.
Is the poem called Manjaw?
Jesus Christ. My father has a daughter and I have feelings too, and if I knew your father, I would do the same for you.
Motherfucker, fucker.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am no longer straight edge after having to sit here and listen to that.
There was this one comment that I saw where this one dude said, not even remotely good. So I click on his Facebook and all of his photos are him with his two young sons at TNA events. Ah. You know, if they make a wish kiss, I bet they wish they were a Raw.
Friend Blink.
Brother. There. All fixed. That was it. That was the Hogan audio right there, man.
Don't trust Rick Dunne.
Something gay must have happened to you and you didn't like it, so now you're mad against the world. Like, get over it.
When you said something gay must have happened in the past and they didn't like it, I thought you meant like buying Batman Arkham Knight for PC.
No, it's just like
what, why are you so pissed off? Something gay happened to me. I bought the PC version of Batman Arkham Knight.
Friend Blink.
And the looks on their faces, it almost seems like TNA doesn't have fans. They have victims. And there's people who defend it to me, man. There's listeners that we have that defend it to me. They'll privately message me and they'll literally justify everything. It's the craziest thing I've ever seen. They'll explain every single illogical
justify
thing.
Justify that lollipop.
You see, you could talk about old wrestling without saturating your show with it and it still works.
Little those jabs tonight, man. I should introduce you as Ronda Rousey next time.
Goodness. Rowdy Ronda Rousey.
Thank you, gay Jesus.
Hey. Casting aside their regular work to try this other thing. You see, that's how you become a comedian. You know, that's some initiative.
What about me? And then the crowd goes, what about Beretta?
You can't have that. Can't just give that to Trent Beretta. No way.
Yeah. What the hell was that? I don't even know what that was.
That was...
And so it begins... the journey into our hearts, minds, and sarcastic souls.
What are we listening to tonight?
We're going to play Guess That Song again.
I don't know what this is.
Yes, you do. Deja vu. You know what you need, man? You need Shazam. You ever use Shazam before?
I actually have it, yeah.
You just aim that shit at songs and it tells you the name of them and the band and everything and then it saves it. That's what I do.
I feel like I do know that song. It's just at the moment it escapes me right now.
Once again, listeners, just like last week, message us, tweet us. What is that song?
They're just going to do what you did in Shazam it.
Yeah, right. I gave away how to do it. And then I tell them to do it. I fucked up the whole contest forever now.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. So this is it. The Walking Dead pre-show. Obviously, you've been here before. You know how this works. We're going to get into that in a little bit. But before we do, I just wanted to talk about a couple of things coming up, things that we've been doing. How have you been this week anyway?
I've been great, actually.
Yeah, good week?
Yeah, not too much to complain about. Nothing at all to complain about, honestly.
Cool. Yeah.
What about you?
Yeah, it's been a really busy week. If anyone that's been listening, I was on a few of the other podcasts on Rant EM Radio Network. I went on the pre-show for the Hell in the Cell and the post-show. with AA and the rest of company, Tony C and everyone else. Really fun time. We analyzed everything. We went on and gave our predictions. A lot of them were wrong since Hell in a Cell was all over the place.
That it was.
But some of them were accurate. You know, we had a good time there. I'm probably going to be on What Are You Reading? I believe Sunday. We're going to be doing something on there.
Cool. I haven't picked up a comic book in months.
Yeah, I got to get caught up, but I go back every now and then. I'll be fine. I grew up in comic culture.
Yeah. It's funny you say that because I might actually go out tomorrow with the wife and just head down to Midtown Comics or something and pick up some books.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. There's a lot of interesting stuff going on, a lot of stuff being rebooted. But yeah, I'm going to go on there and do that. It's just been really crazy. It's been a crazy week. Unfortunately, I also had to go to a funeral. I mentioned on here a couple of episodes ago that a friend of mine that ran a comic store had passed away. And I went there. I got to say, I don't like funerals. I thought I would get some sort of closure or something out of this entire thing. And I really didn't. The entire thing, the church was basically plugging themselves the entire time that we were there, which was awkward. Yeah, I know. You would think, what, when I'm saying it? But this isn't like no bullshit. Like, yeah, I was there to pay my respects. You know, I told you off air. This wasn't about me being social or catching up with people. I don't like the fact that in funerals, people that you've been out of touch with want to use that as an opportunity to get in touch. And with me, it's more like I'm very accessible. Don't use like a death as a time to do that. Not saying anyone did, but I'm saying my general just perspective on funerals is that. That being said, when I go there, my focus is to mourn the person. And at this thing, this church was all about, like, every time they could, they were like, there was a point where they were shouting out different ministers and stuff, almost like, I guess, within their little church culture, you would know who they are. And, like, one dude got, like, a really loud pop, and they were like, oh, you're going to have to brace yourself for this one here today with
us. Are you kidding me?
Is Reverend
funeral?
Whatever, blah, blah, blah. And they popped hard from, they kind of slipped in, I guess, what's it called when you go to church? Like, the 2 hours every Sunday? Like a mass?
On earth?
Like a mass?
Stop. I'm kidding.
Yeah, we just joke on here. We kid. But yeah, no, it was almost like it was a mass.
It was like a whole service.
Yeah, they slipped in a whole mass that was completely unrelated with the mourning and stuff.
Man.
Which when I was younger, I've been to funerals, never really for anyone close, but this was a little bit like, ugh, they're really laying it on thick. And, you know, people there that I know, that I was acquainted with, were in agreement with me that they were a little bit bad, but that's the reason why I stay away from that entire culture and everything. I mean, to each his own. If that's what they want to do, that's fine. Right. But for me, screw that. There's no way. Like, that's really, it felt a little bit insincere, and I was disappointed at just the way it was presented. Just my experience. Probably never going to one of those again.
That's really insane. I've been to, what, two or three funerals my entire life, and it's pretty much been straightforward. You get there. There's the casket there, you mourn the person. One or two people may go up and say what they have to say, like share a memory or whatever. Then you stand up, they sing a hymn or whatever, and everybody goes about their business. Yes, like you said, some people will use the opportunity to talk to you after and say, hey, we haven't seen you in a while. We should talk more often, blah, blah, blah.
But then, like in Dave Chappelle,
everybody goes their own way.
Then, like in Dave Chappelle, you hold up the wrap it up sign, wrap it up. Like you're trying to get out of there. You know, that's essentially what you have to do. But, you know, it's just one of those things where it's like, I was really fond of the guy and he deserved a lot more. I could kind of hear him complaining because he was very sarcastic. I could hear him complaining saying, this isn't what I would have done. This wasn't even about me. So it was just kind of funny. It was more to honor him, but I just kind of feel like I don't know. Whatever. I don't want to go to any more things like that this year. Screw that.
I would say ever, but it is inevitable.
It really all depends. I mean, it's ultimately always a choice. I don't know really, when I would say yes and when I would say no to this kind of stuff. I guess no one fortunately knows when they want to do that kind of shit, you know?
Exactly.
But it was more for closure, but I just didn't really feel I got that level of closure going to that kind of a thing.
I wouldn't feel like it either based on the way you said everything was handled.
Yeah, I was expecting to start passing around the hat, you know? Put some money. I honest to God, as funny as a joke as that is, like all kidding aside, there was a point there where it almost felt like I could see it. They wanted to pass around the little bowl for us to give them money. And so they were converting us, trying to tell us what days we can go to churches, where we can find other boroughs that have their branches that we can go to if we want to go to church tomorrow. And I mean,
Jesus.
Yeah, literally Jesus. It was all over the place, man. So, yeah, that was my time. Aside from that, thankfully, I got to hang out with AA and the other Rant DM guys on the other shows, and we had some fun and did some stuff there, and that sort of I guess, made up for it.
Cool, cool.
And yeah, you know, I have Halo 5, is it now? I'm actually losing track, damn. But yeah, Halo 5 is already sitting on my hard drive, along with WWE 2K16, as promised.
Yeah, I got WWE 2K16 sitting on mine also.
Yeah, I was going to go for the $90 on Halo like I did with the WWE. I usually like to get the biggest bundle, but when I looked at it, it seems to operate on a system similar to Call of Duty, where you open up those packs that will have random guns and armors and things in them for you, and all it seemed to really have in addition to the game was packs like that.
Oh, so it's like, why bother?
Yeah, it was more or less like, you can earn those in-game. I'm not giving you any money because you're bundling in your microtransactions into a premium pack, not including a season pass, by the way, and then just handing it to me. It's like, sorry, I'm always willing to get the biggest bundle, but I can see when it's sort of a decoy, and that's what we were going through with the entire Halo thing here. So I would say anyone who wants to get it, just get the $60 one and play some Halo. Don't go crazy with the DLC with this one. Not yet, at least, until something significant comes out.
Yeah, this WWE is the first time I've paid for the whole bundle, the season pass and the accelerator and all that stuff. I usually end up buying all that stuff anyway. And I guess I end up paying more for it when I do it separate, but I just went all in and I just bought the whole $90 bundle.
Very cool. Very cool.
So why not?
Yeah, we'll be streaming that. I'm working on getting our audio and everything together so we can really do some crazy stuff on there. But there'll be some cool stuff coming up with that. Worry not.
If it all plans out the way I think it is, up, up, down, down, you're going to have some competition.
Nah, I don't call them out. They can wrestle. They'll kick our asses. That's where the competition will end.
I don't know. I really want to play Austin Creed in some 2K16.
That would be cool. That would definitely be a markup moment right there. We'll see what happens, though. We'll definitely see what happens.
Anything's possible.
Mm-hmm. All right, so Walking Dead.
From one bad story to another.
Oh boy. All right. So basically there were quite a few interesting things that happened in this Walking Dead. I don't even know if we should take this one scene by scene. I'm prepared to, but I mean, really the bullet points here are they try to troll us a little bit. No matter which way we look at this, the creators of that show tried to troll us just a little bit. You gotta say.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I guess I'm not
mad at him either. It was well done.
I ain't mad at you. No, it wasn't. We're going to get into that, though. So this one basically starts with Rick and company in the woods, and Rick's telling Daryl to draw the horde, and he tells Michonne and Glenn to try and get as many people as they can back to Alexandria. But he breaks it to them. He breaks the bad news to them that they're not going to be able to save everyone on this trip back. And Heath overhears them saying it. When he basically tells Michonne, if you have to leave somebody, you leave them behind. Do you hear me? And he kind of breaks it to him. Yeah, that's my Rick. Take it or leave it. You know, and just as he's saying that, one of them gets their neck ripped open. Like right when he says, you're not going to be able to save anyone. One of them gets killed right there. The same one that was complaining the whole time,
wasn't it?
Yeah.
Or was he second?
I don't even remember. These guys came and went so fast. They were the red coats from Star Trek. Remember the old Star Trek? They would have the red coats.
Yeah.
You would have, who did you have in that? You had the regular guys would always beam down to the planet. And that's why to this day I love old Star Trek, as corny as it is, because it would always be Kirk, Spock, and I believe Dr. McCoy was the number three guy, right?
Yes, Dr.
He would beam down to the planet, but the fourth guy was always just some dude in a red shirt. It was always a random dude in a red shirt. And that motherfucker never made it back up. Like, he never made it. You automatically, if you got used to Star Trek, you got used to the idea that this guy was not making it back up. But what caught me about it and what I like about it is the fact that they were so insensitive to this red person. If you ever watched any episode, I seen one where like some goo or some shit was on the planet and they're all walking around. All of a sudden the goo leaps up and basically disintegrates the guy. And you hear the Wilhelm scream. Ah! I don't know if you guys ever heard the Wilhelm scream. I'm going to look for it right here. I'm going to play it for you. Hold on a minute. They have to hear the Wilhelm scream. It's a famous scream. You'll find it used in a lot of movies. A lot of directors will put that into their movies sort of as a signature type of a scream. It's just an iconic thing that people do. So I'm going to give you a Wilhelm scream. You've heard it. You've heard it, McWrestling. I'm telling you. This is in every movie, some TV shows. So here we go.
I'm imagining what it is already.
Yeah, I'll just fill my pipe.
This is the original version. He gets shot with an arrow. His name was Wilhelm. You hear it? You hear that. They use it in countless movies going back decades.
Yeah, it's like they take the same exact scream and everything. Yeah.
I'm watching a compilation of movies that's used in them from 1954.
Yeah, it's got to be the same soundbite, man.
Look, Star Wars, he shoots a stormtrooper. Empire Strikes Back. Raiders of the Lost Ark. The guy falls out the back of the truck. Return of the Jedi, the guy that falls into that pit. Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
Tuning in to TNA every week.
The guy who got ripped up in, by the alley, Howard the Duck. Willow. Lost Crusade, Indiana Jones. Beauty and the Beast, Disney. Wow.
Beauty and the Beast?
Young Indiana Jones. Yeah. So this goes on for a while. But anyway, point being, wow, we've segued so far from Walking Dead. That's why I love doing this show.
Yeah.
But anyway, the Redcoats used to do that scream at times in Star Trek. And I just remember a few times they were on a planet and like something attacked one of the Redcoats and literally he one-shotted him. And it was like, ah! And then you just see Spock go matter of fact and logical, go over to whatever the melting guy's captain. There seems to be some stuff like they didn't even mourn this motherfucker for like a few seconds. You know, it was just like, dude, you guys just lost a guy on that planet. No one seemed shocked or taken back. They just kept it moving, you know?
He's just a soldier, man. It's like, it happens.
Yeah, and that's sort of what happened in Walking Dead. That's how we got into this conversation. Walking Dead had a lot of Redcoats where we would just be walking and all of a sudden, just out of nowhere, without you expecting it. And it was like, I can't even keep up with these characters.
Yo,
at this point.
It's funny because I'm actually watched Talking Dead this week and what's his name was on there? The producer?
Yeah, yeah.
And even he says, he was like, yo, I don't even remember some of these people's names.
It's ridiculous at this point. Oh, man. Fun, fun, fun. So that guy gets killed, and then it cuts to Michonne and Glenn and her little party, and Heath also. And they make some quick work of some walkers on the trip back. And then the other dudes that are with them, the rookies, because they have like sort of like a rookie team behind them, they decide they're going to get in on some of the action, too, and they attack some walkers.
And which like, I commended them for that, because it was like, rather than stand around and be hopeless, it was like, you know what, this is our time. And it's like, we're going to stand out, we're going to shine, we got to survive. If this is going to be life from now on, let's get it done.
Young. And one of them named Sturgis pulls a gun out and he accidentally shoots Scott in the leg. Scott is the new black guy, so Scott gets shot in the leg. It's a clusterfuck here because while they're fending off the walkers, the guy who's watching them, the other rookie, he winds up getting hit in the neck, right? He gets bit in the neck by one of the walkers from behind when they're looking at Scott's leg. So we lose another person there.
Which was weird that the walker was able to even sneak up on him like that without them hearing the leaves or anything rustling.
Yeah, where are we getting these stealth walkers from? What the hell's going on here, Walking Dead? You know, that was just one of the small problems. I was enjoying it. You know, we're going to critique it a little bit, but I mean, I did enjoy it. We'll get to the end part soon. But next we go to Daryl, Sasha, and Abraham. Daryl wants to go back and not be on this ridiculous trip anymore. Sasha basically tells him that we can't stop you from going, but without you, they can stop us.
Right.
And Daryl contemplates that for a minute. And he goes, I have faith in you. And he rides off.
And then just fucking leaves
him there. So we get back to Michonne and her people. David asks Michonne if the bite is bad. And then we find, I mean, she says basically it's just pretty bad. You know, it's as bad as you would expect. You're going to die. She doesn't say that, but you know, it's like,
she's like, it's as bad as you expect. And he's like, well, I didn't expect this.
Yeah. And then, we find out about him that he's been married for 3 months, but that wasn't his wife before the apocalypse. And he sort of has a similar story to Michonne.
She relates to him because of that.
Yeah, exactly. Because there was a point where he gave up on life and stopped feeling human. So she clicked with him immediately. And then they wind up coming across Sturgis, that punk ass before they shot Scott that left them behind. Because after he shot him, he ran off into God knows where. And we find him being eaten.
Well, they find the hat first and then they find him.
Mm-hmm. And they wind up hiding inside of a pet store. And it's a shitty scene because as they walk in, you see bones of dead animals that I'm assuming just died and starved to death in their cages because there was no one there to release them or take care of them. Glenn decides that they need to burn one or more of the buildings around to distract the herd away. Michonne urges Glenn, though, that he has a wife, to which he states that that's the reason why he's doing this.
And then pissed me off. It was like, wouldn't that be more of the reason for you to not be the one to go do this shit? Like, I get his whole heroic mentality, but come on. I'd have been like, send the dude that got bit already.
You know, Glenn, he has to be the badass.
Yeah.
That's just who he is. There's nothing else to it. And then we have Rick running down the road and he takes out a couple of walkers and he cuts himself in the process with the knife. But he winds up looting the walkers for whatever they have, but his hand's cut. I don't really know where they're going with his hand being cut in the process of killing walkers, but they did emphasize
that. You know
where
they're going with it, you know.
I don't think that it would be anything involving his hand, if you're thinking of what I'm thinking of. I don't, that would be such a lame way to do it that I don't think they would do that.
It would.
That'd be such a punk ass lame way to do that. And we're going to talk.
Like I was watching this scene and I was like, they can't be doing it like this because you got to tell me. No, you gotta tell me, you can't tell me that in the whole time that they've been going through this zombie apocalypse that he hasn't had little cuts and scrapes on him and that obviously Walker blood has gotten into the cuts.
Listen, I have faith in this series and Tyrese aside, and I guess Andrea sort of aside, characters aren't generally going to suffer losses due to dumbass situations. Okay. And I know those of you that saw this episode are thinking about the end of this episode. But we're going to get to that because I'm standing, I am standing by my perspective of
dumbass
things don't happen.
I'm pretty sure we have the
same
perspective.
Yeah. So I'm not even a bit concerned here. So then we get back to Heath, who he's bandaging Scott's leg, and Annie, who was this entire time with the group limping around. She tells them to leave her because she can't walk and she's slowing them down, and Scott, who's shot in the leg, also agrees. And then Heath says that we don't leave people behind, and he looks at Michonne and says, not us, you know, sort of tongue in cheek, since he heard the entire thing with Rick. And then at this point Michonne pulls him to the side and they have the talk, you know, because Heath is upset about overhearing what Rick said. And she explains that Rick said what he said because sometimes you don't have a choice in these situations. And he says that that's not how we do things. And she explains that's because you've never had to do things that way before. And then she basically goes into gruesome detail of what it's like to be covered in blood, not knowing if it's walkers or your own or your friends, and having to kill people before they kill you and all this other shit. And then I think he starts to get it a little bit more. What do you think? What's your take on TV show Heath?
I like TV show Heath. He looks the part. He looks like his counterpart from the comic books. I'd say he's a little bit more of a badass on the show than he was in the book.
A little bit.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't really get that much into his character because I remember I haven't finished the books. I've gotten up to the part where they meet, I believe the guy's name is Jesus.
Yes.
Yeah. Jesus. So they had, like, I haven't gotten up to where they've even met Negan. I know what Negan does in the book, but I haven't gotten that far. But, I like his character. I like how, Michonne put him in his place, and he went from like being a little whiny bitch about it to, all right, I understand. I thought I knew everything, but I don't. And clearly you're the more experienced one. I'm going to follow your lead.
Absolutely. And I think that I'm glad that he didn't turn out to be an asshole, because quite frankly, there's too many assholes, right? It's like assholes
everywhere. Yeah.
Too many of those.
I mean, even in the book, he wasn't an asshole, so.
Yeah, so we get back to Glenn and Nicholas. And they come across a walker that Nicholas knew from a previous run where they left the guy behind. And they have a little bit of a moral story there. And Nicholas winds up taking the guy out. And the walkers around hear the gunshots nearby from the battles that are going on. And then they wind up coming toward them.
Yeah, like the whole horde.
Yeah, so Nicholas and Glenn run off. And we cut to the scene of the team. I call them Team Pet Shot now. Team Pet Shot with Heath and Michonne hear the gunshot at the same time, and the walkers from the alley get drawn by the gunfire.
You call them Team Pet Shop. I call them Team Special Olympics.
Oh, ouch. I see what you did there.
Yeah, because each of them had, like, something wrong with them.
Because they're all limpy and stuff. Yeah. I get it. So then we get back to Rick, who's on the road, and he runs past a wall of a pile of walkers, the one that they had the barricade built at, and then he gets into the trailer that's near there, and he drives off. And we wind up back at the pet store, and we have David, who's writing a letter to his wife, Betsy, that says, you know, love, if you're reading this, it's because I didn't make it. You know, before she takes the letter and she writes on her arm, Michonne writes, you're getting home. And then we hear pounding on the back door of the place where they're in. And of course, they rush to stop it because that pounding is going to get the attention of the walkers that are outside. And when they open the back door, there's a couple of walkers in there that they wind up having to kill. And the other walkers did hear all of the ruckus. And now the herd is basically on them and they have to fight their way out of there. So they shoot and fight their way out of there. On the way out, Annie falls behind when they're running away.
That bugged me.
Why did that bug you?
Okay, well, first the whole thing, it was like, how long were those walkers in there that now of all times they decide to start making noise and pounding on the door louder than loud can be? Like in my head, I was thinking that can't be walkers in there. It's like somebody came back and they're like trying to get in through the back door. And then when they opened it and the walkers popped out, I was like, oh, okay, it's walkers.
This goes back to what we talked about a little while ago. There's too many stealth walkers in this series.
Exactly. And then the next thing is like when they get outside now and Annie falls. Annie has a sprained ankle at this point, right?
Yeah, and she's on a crutch or something, I believe.
Yeah. My wife was like, where the fuck did she get the crutch from? I'm like, they must have made a makeshift crutch from... Well, it wasn't even like a crutch. It was like a cane, like a walking cane. They must have made it out of like one of the shelves inside the pet shop.
I think I heard them say something about that, yeah.
Yeah. Now, what bugged me about it is like I've had a sprained ankle like in junior high school from playing basketball. When she fell, there was enough time for her to turn back over because, like, a sprained ankle ain't like a broken leg. She could have turned over, used her good foot, like, popped herself right back up and kept limping away. But she laid there on the floor and she was like, no, go, leave me, and then wasted out the last of her shells and got herself eaten.
Yeah, she
I just
sure
feel
did.
Like that's what bugged me. She could have saved herself.
As Wolverine would say, rookie.
Like, no. there shouldn't have been any reason for them to even have to turn back and, like, pause to pick her up. She should have been able to pick up herself and keep going.
Yeah, well, no, she's eaten to death. And when Nicholas and Glenn find the buildings that they plan to burn, they were already burned when they get there. And they find themselves surrounded by walkers from all sides. And right after they're surrounded, we get back to Michonne and the group who are doing the fence climbing, where they're trying to climb over a fence as a horde comes near them. Heath makes it over. Good old Scott makes it over.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course,
it's up to Michonne.
It's up to Michonne and David. And David, unfortunately, does not make it over. He gets eaten. And that's pretty much the end of his story. He doesn't get to give his letter to his loved one or anything like that. They just sort of ended his whole run really morbidly.
Like you even see like the dirty walker boots step on it.
Mm-hmm.
I felt bad for him, too, because like they still kind of left him there, too. To get torn up and shit. I would have been like, sorry, bro. And I would have just shot him in the head.
I agree with that. That was a little bit amateur of them. Maybe they just didn't want to make more noise.
She said she'd have left him. She would have been like, fuck it.
That's cold. Jeez. Not,
she was like, I'm not going to waste a bullet on you. I might need it later.
Wow. Holy shit. What the hell? Who did you marry? Are you kidding me? I don't want to waste bullets. She's like Maddie from Fear the Walking Dead. She doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah.
Like, Alicia, leave your boyfriend there. He's black and he's bit. We don't give a shit. We're a white suburban family. We are out of this bitch. Too much, man. Too much. So then we get to Nicholas and Glenn and the infamous fighting on top of the dumpster scene. So what is your take on this? I'm going to let you grab this scene a little bit. I've been wondering the hell you were thinking.
Yeah. So you know how it all played out. They get to the dumpster. They climb up on the top to avoid the walkers because they realize there's no way they can run to get around them. So they climb up on the top, and as soon as they get up there, he just goes into, like, the zone. Like, I guess he's accepting the fact that he's not going to make it. This is the end for him.
Well, he was showing signs throughout the whole episode that there was something wrong, right? Like, it seemed almost like he knew. Like, he just kept having these little bit of blackouts throughout the episode, so I think they were foreshadowing this happening. But, yeah. Continue.
So then, like, Glenn's grabbing him, and Glenn's, like, trying to, like, snap him back to reality. He's shaking him, and he's, like... And, like, the whole time in this scene, I'm looking at the corner left side, and I realize there's, like, a way that they could, like... If they could make it through the zombies to the walkers, they could just, like, run up there and get up to the roof for safety.
Right.
And, like, I'm watching them all pile in, and I'm, like, no, there's no way they can make it. But, like, a part of me was still... I'm, like, they can't jump... to the barbed wire gate, and I'm like, there's no way they can make it. And I'm like, maybe if they make it like somewhat believable, but I'm like, no, this is The Walking Dead. There's no way they're gonna like make that jump and get to safety.
Okay.
And then the asshole turns around and he says, thank you. He doesn't even say sorry. He says, thank you, and blows his brains out. And in the process, Glenn grabs him. Or I think, like, yeah, Glenn grabs him. And I guess, like, the weight of his body.
Well, he sort of falls against Glenn.
Yeah, he falls against Glenn. And then, like, they both go down into the horde of zombies that were, like, pretty much clutching at their boots at that point. And then you see them, like, they go to town. Like, they turn. And it looks like they're tearing Glenn to shreds. Like, they rip his chest open and they're pulling out his intestines and whatnot. And Glenn's just there, like, he's embracing the last moments of life, it looks like, in his face as they pull the camera away.
Right. Okay. Well, and what's your whole take on this?
At first, I was just like, no fucking way. I was sitting there in disbelief, like, jaw hanging and everything. But then I came to the conclusion, I was like, they can't write Glenn off like that. I mean, I get they're not following the books anymore. If our listeners have actually read the books, you know, Glenn makes it a little bit further than that.
Yeah.
So
we'll just leave it at that.
You also got to factor in, what's the dude's name again?
Which dude?
The one that Deb was brings up.
Oh, Nicholas. Yeah.
Nicholas. Yeah. You got to factor Nicholas landed cleanly on top of Glenn. So when you're seeing the intestines get ripped out and whatnot, I've come to the conclusion that that's Nicholas getting like ripped to pieces. Glenn is still pinned under him.
And he'll probably slip away or something into the dumpster. There's an opening, some shit like that. They're going to do something. Because first of all, it's not even a matter. They tried to pull a Jon Snow type deal here where we don't know what's going on when we actually do know what's going on because we're not stupid. But also, I don't really think they would do such a punk ass death like that. Like, that's ridiculous. I don't think they would just suddenly do something stupid. This goes back to what I was saying earlier, where I have faith in this show. They're not going to make someone suffer loss for a stupid reason like that. Not someone like Glenn.
There's that, and then they even hinted it because, what's her face? Yvette from Community? I forget her last name.
Yeah.
But when she was on Talking Dead, like, this chick, she takes notes, man, and they pointed it out. Like, we've seen it, and I don't watch Talking Dead like that. I watch it when she's on it, if Punk's on it. Yeah. Or certain celebrities on it. But whenever she's on it, like, she always has her little book of notes, and she has notes from all the way back to season one and whatnot. And she talked about the foreshadowing of, like, when they got to the church with Father Gabriel, how everybody saw, like, a biblical thing, and they pretty much, like, it became like a mantra, something that they lived by. And she talks about how she doesn't think that this is the end of Glenn, and how another thing they mentioned later on in the episode was when they do the little montage of people that died in the episode.
Yeah, he wasn't in there.
Glenn wasn't in there, and she pointed that out too.
Yeah, and generally the person that dies when it's someone big like Glenn, they're a guest on The Talking Dead right afterwards.
Yeah.
They do have a surprise guest next week, which means generally that somebody's going to die because they would tell you who it is if it wouldn't give that away. So it's either that they did kill him in a punk ass way, and next week's going to be the send-off, which would be really horrible and stupid, or that we're on the right track and that Glenn didn't get killed in such a ridiculous way, written like shit.
Yeah, I think he's still alive, and then they kind of slipped up and they tried to cover their tracks too, because he was like, you know, maybe Glenn will come back in, like, you know, like a past scene or something, kind of like what they did with Herschel, where when we saw Herschel die and then the next week the episode opened up and Herschel was alive and well and Rick was farming and everything. And then you realize it was just like, I don't know if it was supposed to be a flashback before things went bad, or it was just like Rick thinking of what could have been had Herschel survived the attack, or had the attack never happened.
Yeah, well, take it for what you will, but if you don't want to hear this, just jump ahead about 30 seconds. But production spoiler alert, I've seen screenshots of Glenn with Jesus. So unless they manage to do something that they knew Jesus already and he's just not mentioned in the present, then this is an adventure on the side, which to me would make no sense. Somehow I've seen shots of Glenn with Jesus, so I have to assume that it's fine and there's nothing to worry about here.
And we're not talking about our holy Lord and Savior here, people.
No, we're not.
Read the books, damn it.
Indeed. That's what I want you guys to do, actually. That we can all talk about everything freely on here. Well, we're going to talk about everything freely on here anyway, so hopefully you don't care. Anyway, so back to Michonne's team, both her and the other guy.
Heath and the other dude, yeah.
Yeah, the other people make it back home, and they see the chaos of what everything looks like. It just basically looks like shit. Everything is destroyed. first they reach a river, actually, and they have to carry him across. Remember that with Heath?
Yeah, and Heath looks at his reflection in the water, which, that again, that bugged me too. Little minor detail. His face has the blood splattered on it, but his glasses were perfectly clean.
Dan, you are a detail hawk, man. You're not letting these guys. The man has to see for the scene, man. Come on. You got to let these little things go.
I would get it like, okay, it's splattered on the glasses. Obviously, he's not going to leave the blood on his glasses. He'll wipe it off. But he wouldn't have been able to wipe it off that clean to the point that you wouldn't have seen smudging on the glasses.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
I agree, though. I see the logic in that. But, man, that is some detail right there.
I got to make up for not remembering the names.
So, yeah, ultimately, Michonne gets to see what happens and what she comes home to the destroyed Alexandria. And we get back to Rick, who's in the RV. And Rick tries to call Glenn on the walkie-talkie. And he doesn't get in contact with him, obviously. So he calls Daryl, who's on the motorcycle, and he says that he's going to be coming their way.
He called a couple of more people, and then he finally calls Daryl, and Daryl answers. Because after he calls Glenn, and then his face looks like, nah, it can't be. And then I don't know who he calls next. It's not one of the main guys. It's somebody else's name, he says. And that guy doesn't answer. And then he calls Daryl, and Daryl finally answers.
Yeah. And then he says he's going to be coming their way. And Sasha says, you hear that? He's going to be coming our way. And Daryl makes the U-turn. And suddenly Rick is being shot and attacked by some wolves that are outside. I think they're the ones that Morgan let go, right?
It was the exact group that Morgan let go. Because remember, right as they were running out, one of them picked up a gun.
Yeah, the ones that we were on here last week saying that we hope this doesn't come full circle.
It fucking came full circle, all right.
And he winds up, after he takes them out, he sees more of them through the rearview mirror. And he just shoots through the wall of the trailer. And he just kills all of them.
See, I guess I played too much first-person shooters with you. I wouldn't have done it like that. Like, they knew that they sent their guy in there to take out Rick. Because actually, it wasn't just the one that shot at him. I remember, it was two of them that went in.
Yeah.
So it was like Rick took down the first guy that was shooting at him. Then the second one went in. And the whole time, I'm like, the other three must be somewhere around there. And my wife was like, wasn't it four of them? And I'm like, no, I think it was five. And then that's when, after he takes out the two of them, like with ease, by the way, he looks in the mirror and he sees the other three. I would have just like ducked down and then waited till they actually entered the RV, and then I would have shot him. I figured he would have saved more bullets that way.
Yeah, but you're giving them an opportunity. If even one of them is trained at taking corners with his gun, then you have to be the faster draw because he's going to come in firing.
Remember, they don't have guns. Him. They only left with the one that they took.
Yeah, but Rick doesn't know who's firing at him. You know, it's not like Rick's seeing these people and shit. He just knows more people are coming. And why take chances at this point? He's lucky to be alive at this point. Literally, true, because they shot him when he was in the front seat. They shot at him. Why roll the dice anymore on that day? I would have shot straight through the fucking thing. I would have blown up the whole trailer if need be. I don't care.
I don't
know. I stayed there.
I overthink things. Like, the way I saw them creeping, he could have looked, and the mirror was dirty, so he couldn't see them clearly enough to see whether they what weapons they had on them.
Yeah,
but I would have just... I don't know. That's me. I guess I would have grabbed one of the bodies, used it as a human shield, and then like just peeked out from the side.
Oh yeah, but you're making Rick into Rambo now. You know what I mean? You're playing another man with another man's life here. Like, at the end of the day, like, what's easier and safer for him to do? Like, who wants to do that shit? I'll just shoot him through the wall. I'm not gonna. There's no way they can kill me this way. I'm gonna live to see tomorrow. I'm not gonna die in a stupid way like Nicholas. I'm making it home.
I guess. I mean, it did work out in his favor, because I remember they cut from that, and then when they went back, I was like, did he get all of them? And then as soon as I asked that question, the camera cut back to the mirror, that dirty rearview mirror, and you could see the three bodies laying right next to each other.
Yeah, so they're all dead. And then Rick can't start the thing.
Mm-hmm, and they're coming from every direction.
Yeah, and he's sort of freaking out about it.
After he drops the two guys, remember, he checks their pockets and he finds the baby food.
Right.
Which lets him know that these guys just came back from Alexandria. So he, like, that's like his main thing. Like, they got the baby food. They were there. He was like, he has to get back now and make sure that Judith and everybody else is safe. And that's why he's all frantic about trying to start the RV.
Very true. Very true. All right. Well, overall, it was a good episode, though. I enjoyed it. I'm calling bullshit on the Glenn thing. I really hope they didn't do that. That would be so stupid.
Yeah. I'm going to agree with you that. Because at first I was just sitting there, and then, like, maybe 5-10 minutes after the scene, I was like, no, there's no way he could have died. And then it's like, with the way they were ripping out the body parts, I was thinking, if they were ripping up ripping open his chest, they wouldn't get to his intestines. The intestines were a little bit high up. And I was thinking that would only make sense if they were like ripping through Nicholas's back and they were getting the intestines from there.
Yeah. And the fact that the shot was done in a way that we can't tell for sure was definitely done intentionally. He wasn't coughing up blood or anything. It was definitely left open ended.
You definitely, like, you saw Nicholas fell on top of him cleanly. The thing is, like, the thing that I don't know we're going to have like, some disbelief on is how he's going to get out of that.
Overall, it was decent. I had no problem with it.
Yeah. I mean, I just asked that question, and I thought about it, and I guess him being covered in the blood of Nicholas, then, like, after the walkers kill Nicholas, they'll get up and walk away?
No, more or less. He's going to have to escape while Nicholas is still being eaten. They're not going to just not eat the dude underneath. Like, he's going to be obscured enough that he can probably slip away somewhere.
Mm.
It wouldn't surprise
The only way that would work, and I can't be mad about it, would be if they do what they did with the other chick. I forgot her name already. The one that died in front of the shop with the bat, with the busted ankle, where some of the walkers took her down, and the others just, they were like, oh, they already got their kill, and they were going after the others. So it'd be like the walkers take down Nicholas, and then like five of them are eating at Nicholas, and then the herd just turns around and just walks away.
That's ridiculous. That's not going to happen. What the fuck? No, listen.
I mean, it gives him a chance to kick out and then like fight off the five or whatever amount is there.
No. That's not going to be what happens. This entire episode has been a throwback to Rick and Glenn's first meeting. Didn't he call him what he used to call him in the first episode, like dumbass or something over the walkie-talkie?
Yeah, he did when he called him on the walkie the last time, yeah.
Which was a throwback to when he spoke to him on the walkie-talkie the first time. And there was a point where they were both standing together on top of something surrounded by walkers. You remember that? Like, so
was
far...
That all, the, no, that wasn't the tank. That was... was it
they
the
were
tank?
On an object. It doesn't matter. But the point being that they were standing on an object, it's a throwback to that scene. And if you recall, I think another throwback we're going to see is that at one point, Rick was surrounded by walkers underneath a tank and he climbed up into it. It turned out there was an opening for him to climb up into it. So I think what we're going to see is possibly Glenn slips under the dumpster and climbs up into a hole inside of it. Something like that, I think.
I don't know if dumpsters have holds on it. I guess we're about to find out next week.
There may be something. I mean, either that or they trolled the shit out of us. Either way, they trolled us because they made it look like Glenn is dead to tug at our heartstrings.
Yeah, and I don't believe he's gone.
Or they killed him in a stupid way.
Yeah.
Useless and senselessly, which I don't believe that either. So
I mean,
we'll
they did the same shit with Andrea, so.
Yeah, but they, I guess. We'll have to see because that's what scares me about it. Like, holy shit, imagine if they killed Glenn in such a punk-ass way.
Mm-hmm.
Might have to find something new to review. What's been going on Arkham lately, huh?
Flash has been pretty good. Ed was on an episode.
Yeah, exactly. Be careful, man.
I don't know. I've been neglecting Heroes. I got to watch that, too.
Yeah. Well, anyway, on that note, let's start the main show.
This is the Talk Brunch Podcast, available at talkbrunch.com. Also on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Talk Brunch, where the heels are all baby faces. And now introducing the two guys who run the whole thing, the tag team champions of the internet, and your hosts, Rick Dara and McWrestling.
What's up, fellow marks? Welcome to episode 80. I'm Slick Rick, here with the one and only master analyst, Mick.
How's it going?
Great, man. Doing really good here. A lot to talk about, man. We had a crazy pay-per-view.
Crazy in a good way or crazy in a bad way?
Crazy in a different way. Hell in a Cell. Oh, boy. Shout out to listeners, to commenters, to Rant DM Radio people. All around. Shout out to the whole crew. Shout out to Jose Ragoza. He's one of our regular listeners. He was at the Hell in the Cell.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and he sent me some pictures over here of the event, just from his perspective. He had pretty decent seats. Last night we were on Rant DM really late doing the Hell in a Cell post-show coverage. There's been very little sleep. I did about 4 hours of Twitch TV streaming of Destiny earlier in the afternoon. So it's just been nonstop. So yeah,
I saw that. I was going to jump on and then like, I got really sidetracked.
Yeah. We just wanted to go and get some time in. Cause I know once we start playing the 2K16, that's going to probably
impose. That's going to be life for
it's
me.
It's going to impose in on my Destiny time, and Halo 5 is another one that's going to do it. So, but yeah, he sent me some shots, really good seats here. I was talking to him last night. Really wild, man. I'm glad he got to go. I'm glad he didn't go to a shit event, because it sucks when you get like tickets to a good event. It's a good seat, but then like the event itself isn't that good.
Like TNA.
Wow. We had to get a jab at them here. I haven't heard from them. They've been quiet this week. This is going to probably, hopefully this will be a short one so we can start streaming or doing something tonight, because
I want to get
some time in with these games and stuff. Not they're sitting on the hard drive waiting, but
like, people are already sending me pictures of them launching the game.
Yeah, exactly. So I want to get on there. Well, since we're on the topic of games, I'm going to just run down some of these WWE 2K16 details that have come up in the last week. This will probably be the final time we talk about details. And from now on, we'll just talk about the features and experiences and plug our videos and stuff. Well, some details came in about universe mode. Apparently, now there's going to be randomly generated match cards per universe. So we're no longer going to all have similar stuff going on in our universes. It's like, it's going to be completely different experiences for everyone.
And I thought that's how it always was.
No, it more or less followed a guideline. And now instead of two possible story instances, there's 10. And you can implement the personality traits in conjunction with that, and you'll get a bunch of combinations. They also have status effects, which is a new feature, which is stuff like hot streaks, conqueror, things like that. If like you want to have someone protected and run through the rest of the roster, cold streaks for jobbers, distracted, things of that nature. You could give characteristics like that to people.
You can have the true Tyler Breeze experience on NXT, or you can have the true Zack Ryder experience for his entire WWE career.
Yeah, exactly. You could even assign injuries, you know, to different people, and they'll sell that in the psychology of the match to their opponent.
Which is, it's cool, because they gave you stuff like that in the past, but it didn't work very well. Where just a character's injured. Like, I've played matches in Universe on 2K15, and I've had stuff where a character's been injured and they're not supposed to be able to be on a card. And for whatever reason, I guess because I was in a rivalry with them, it would put them on the card. And when the match would start, they wouldn't sell the injury. Like, their body would be 100%.
Yeah, exactly. But it's just definitely good that they went in here and they did that. I'm glad that the opponent can now target that injury. Really cool.
That's awesome. Because not to cut you off again, the last time I remember them doing that was SmackDown, like WWF SmackDown for PlayStation 1.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's also some online changes. There's more match types that are available. There's a 2K Tonight mode where they set up matches and events and special events and pay-per-views. So there'll be an ever-changing amount of stuff to do depending on the season that we're in and the pay-per-view that we're on.
I can't wait to take a part of that. Like, I seriously can't wait to take a part of that.
Yeah, that's going to be fantastic. I can't wait to stream that and send and let you all of you guys see it and come in the chat and interact with us and stuff. It's going to be a blast. Great year of stuff coming up. So we're still limited to 20 downloads per day. I don't think that's terrible. I think in the beginning it's terrible, because in my experience, the first couple of days is when I really go in there and I grab a lot of stuff.
See, this is why my first couple of days, like I told you, I always make myself in the game. And that, like, when we get off the air tonight, I'm probably going to be sitting down here until like maybe 5-6 o'clock in the morning. I've already taken like my face shot pictures and everything. Part of the news that they did announce is that now they have a mobile app that you can use to upload your picture onto their server. But after I create my character and like, give him his moveset and his intro and all that jazz, I think I'm going to play the Stone Cold showcase. I'm going to take my time with that. So by the time I go into the community creations, there's some good stuff up there, like the Dudleys, Alberto Del Rio, the Four Horsewomen, and anybody else that didn't make it in.
Very true. Very true. Yeah, I'm just going to play around with it today. I'll keep the stream on. Maybe if you and I don't know if I went into it yet, but the matchmaking, which is what I was about to go into, you can now do team up mode where you make the decision that you and another person are a team And now you invite your friends to these matches, or you can do public matches against random people, play against the AI or whatever. If we do some team up mode at any point tonight, I'll stream it to you guys and you can see that mode in all of its glory, because they fucked us hard in 2K15.
They did. When it came they to definitely that. Did. And it sounds like they gave us back what they took out of 2K16, but they improved on it vastly.
Yeah. I'm getting excited just thinking about the fact that that's waiting here. So awesome. Don't judge me if I make this a short one.
You can't blame us, man. We got Halo tonight and we got WWE.
And you're still getting content either way, because I was on two other shows earlier in the week. I might be on The Rant and a bunch of other shit. And we're going to still be streaming the stuff. So, you know, it is what it is. So not all platforms are going to be getting all of these features. Just to clarify, a lot of this is just next gen. So if you're still on current gen at this point, I guess, right? It's a little too late to be calling it next gen. We're like 2 years in.
We're going into 2 years, yeah.
Also, while you're waiting for opponents, you're in a warm-up ring wrestling.
I like that.
No longer
really
just a loading
like
screen. So that's, I mean, this sounds really awesome. I can't wait. Okay, so basically there's a lot of small stories today. Nothing big happened. All of the wrestlers also went to go play 2K16 and Halo. So we'll just run down the small stories real quick in no particular order. Bubba Ray discussed Spike recently, where he said that if they ever needed Spike, if they ever needed their little brother, if they ever needed the runt of the litter, he's no more than a phone call away and he'd be right there by their sides. And that they think the WWE universe would absolutely go crazy to see the three of them together in the ring again. So maybe they'll do something.
I think it's
like
inevitable.
That. Maybe we'll get a Survivor Series match with them. I think that would be interesting.
It's inevitable. I think if the Dudleys do take the tag titles for the 10th time, it will be with the help of Spike Dudley.
Mm-hmm. And other news, we have Ryback, who says that, in a way, he said he has creative control over himself, because he says, I can say that for me personally, I 100% have been able to do anything I want with Ryback. We've talked about things in certain elements, but I've been allowed creative control to do what I want to do. If Vince McMahon doesn't like anything, he would tell me and we'd correct.
That's cool, because not a lot of people have that. That makes me, not to segue off again, think back to that that mobile game that I play, The Wrestling Revolution, where, like I tell you, you end up working for like UFC and WWE. They're not actually listed by that name for copyright reasons, but they do stuff like that, where when you sign a contract, you can try to bargain out and ask whether, and like have it in your favor that how much money you get paid, whether you have creative control, whether you get paid when you work dates, or whether you, like, if you're injured, you still get paid while you're injured and whatnot.
Right, right.
A lot of the time, like, the promoter will say, no, I don't trust you with creative control. So they must have some stock in Ryback if they're letting him do his own thing.
I've always told you to have stock in that guy. I wouldn't worry too much about him.
Yeah, yeah. Random on the subject of Ryback. Like, what do you think about his attire lately?
I haven't really been paying too much attention to it. But why? What's on your mind about that?
I don't like it. Like, when he first came out, it looked like he had some pretty cool designs on there, because we know it's the same guy that does RVD stuff. But it seemed to me that once RVD came back and then left, just the designs on his attire just got very lazy. Like, it just looks like it's a splash of colors, and then it'll say the big guy on it or feed me more. Like, they're not putting in as much emphasis as they were to actually make it look like something. Maybe, like, I remember one of the designs looked like his chest was like a cyborg chest and it had like green blood oozing out of it. Like, you don't have anything like that anymore.
So you think they toned down the overall detail in the designs?
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if they toned it down because RVD came at the time and he was just like, hey, we can't have his stuff looking as good as mine. I don't peg RVD as the type of person to do something like that.
No, Ryback said in shoot interviews that he actually asked permission first to use the same guy as RVD. I'm pretty sure.
No, I know that. But I mean, like, he has permission to use the same guy, but he might still say, like, hey, our two singlets look very similar in design-wise. Do you want to, like, change it up a bit?
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't put too much thought into it. I'll look at it, though. I definitely will.
You know me. I'm the attention to detail guy. I always like watching it, pick at the little things. Like, it bugs me now when we watch Raw and SmackDown, and they don't even try to hide the fact that they're reading off a script anymore.
Oh, man. They're like voice actors.
Yeah, they're literally sitting there and they're just like reading the script, and it's like, damn. Which used to bug me with the Raw GM thing when they had the stupid the laptop up there, because they would have a script on there too, and it was like, if you have a working laptop, why don't you just leave it on the screen, since he's supposed to be reading emails, but whatever.
Yeah, I bet they don't want you around. Like, man, this guy makes this job hard. Jeez, we can't write anything. What do you guys have so far? No, but you
see, it would make better storylines. I would at least say, if when they were doing the Raw GM shit, it was like, you have a working laptop up on a podium, and the whole storyline is Michael Cole's supposed to be going up there to read what the laptop says. Why not just type up whatever it is he's supposed to read and leave it on the laptop rather than having a sheet of paper on top of a laptop? It just looks stupid.
Man, they would be slaving over the script for 3 hours. They come out from the meeting with you, and you'd be like, so what was approved so far? What do you have? Stephanie and Triple H come out at the beginning of the show.
I'm just saying, man.
Instead of having people working by the pool and writing the shit, you'd have them killing themselves in the pool.
Like, hell fucking yeah. Everyone would have their sheet of paper. Nobody be enjoying the pool. Nobody's like drinking mimosas or whatnot. There's no beach ball getting tossed around.
No, this is becoming the real deal now.
Yep. It'd be like, hey, we could be doing this shit in the office. Enjoy the pool, man.
Incredible. Incredible. So I wanted to talk also a little bit about James Storm, since he was on NXT.
Okay.
You know, he was on the Wednesday episode. Last Wednesday. It was a pretty good match. It was what you would expect from any debut match. You know, nothing really special happened here. He hit him with something called the 8-second ride as his finisher, right?
Yeah, that was his signature in TNA.
Yeah. Well, that was his finisher here. And they asked him when he's going to be on NXT again backstage. And he said, that's a $1 million question. That's really not up to me. My job is to go and get myself over, as they say, and it's up to what we call the suits to make the decision on whether to bring me back to NXT or the WWE main roster. I get so many people all the time saying, we want to see you and Bray Wyatt go at it on the microphone. I always say that you never know what's going to happen in wrestling, and I just take it one day at a time. And I actually have some audio of James Storm here that we're going to go into real quick.
James Storm, tonight you make your debut in NXT, and the NXT universe said it as soon as you came out there, you deserve to be here. I mean, how do you feel?
Did you see it? Did you just watch that? You see the shirt right here? We are NXT. Well, you know what? I am the cowboy James Storm. I'm a creek swimming, moonshine sipping, beer drinking, deer skinning, Johnny Cash listing SLB from Middle Tennessee. That is me. And to hear them say that I deserve to be here, man, it brings me back to my mom when she used to tell me, when nobody else believed in me, I deserve this. You know, seeing that pink ribbon right there, you know, my mom, she went through breast cancer, and thank God she made it through it. So James Storm is here in NXT. And if nobody likes it, hey, tell them, sorry about their damn.
So as you guys can hear, he pretty much retained all of his James Storm persona. All of it. Untouched. I'm really satisfied with that.
You know, I feel bad.
Why is that?
Because I look at the guys that come up now, like the Samoa Joe, who got to remain Samoa Joe, James Storm, who got to remain James Storm. Even the people that had the name changes, like Kevin Owens, he's Kevin Steen, Kevin Owens, same person, different name. Hideo Itami, Kenta, same person, different name. And then you have Chris Harris, or as for whatever reason, the more popular known Braden Walker, former tag team partner of James Storm.
Braden Walker.
I think the dude literally had two matches on ECW. And I remember the very awkward promo where he's backstage with Matt Hardy, and his name used to be Wildcat Chris Harris in TNA. And I remember the backstage segment before his debut, he's there with Matt Hardy, and Matt Hardy goes, great to see you made it, man. And he's like, yeah, yeah. He's like, great to be here. Like, it looks like they knew each other for years. And he was like, man, go out there and show them what a wildcat you are. And then he goes out as Braden Walker. He wins his match, and we don't see him again, ever.
That's rough. That's really rough.
I mean, to say we never see him again. I definitely got to go back and watch that. I didn't catch that last week when you first brought that up.
Adam Rose's new entrance music. That's how you bury someone. Like, holy shit. So one of James Storm's followers on Twitter mentioned that it was going to be a quiet January, which is the same month that TNA is scheduled to hold their TV tapings. And Storm responded saying, well, you never know. There could be December hashtag WWE NXT UK is never the same after I leave. I guess okay. He's kind of implying he's going to be on the NXT UK tour.
I mean, yeah, what else would you take that for?
Yeah, so we haven't seen the last of him. Clearly, there's your answer, TNA. He's not going back. Mm-hmm. Ain't no coming back. Ain't no coming back. For anyone, any of you Kroll fans out there. WWE edited a line on the Brock Lesnar podcast. At one point, Brock Lesnar said...
The thing about the Jew?
Yeah, gotta feed the Jew. And that was edited out of the replay of the podcast. And Lesnar was referring to Paul Heyman when he was talking about how he doesn't speak that much in WWE. And you know what, man? Not for nothing, but that's the kind of shit that, you know, will really make me cancel the network. You know,
like,
I mean?
If you didn't catch it live, then it's edited on the second playback.
Yeah, like, I'm getting this network as an archive, a legit archive that I have access to of things that have happened.
I expected that from the get-go, though.
No, I don't expect edits like that. If it happened, let it be the way that it is. Don't fuck with this stuff.
It's WWE. It's like, if you go back, if you can find the event with the infamous Booker T line, and they edited that too.
That's ridiculous. I mean, it's one thing to censor, but don't just cut stuff out. You know, I don't like that idea.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it was more like they didn't cut it out, but it was more of they censored it. So he says, sucker. He's like, Hulk Hogan, I'm coming for you, sucker.
Good editing there.
Yeah.
CM Punk is nasty again.
Today's his birthday.
Oh, awesome. Anyway, CM Punk on the MMA Hour, and he called Twitter a cesspool of humanity when it comes to the criticism online. And he says that you stomach it by not reading it. That's what you do. Otherwise, you just go fucking insane. And his outlash is apparently due to a theory going around that people are saying he may never make a UFC debut. Like, this just may never happen.
Because he got injured again.
Yeah, and he said that the last thing that he needs is some phony journalist being like, oh, he's fake, injured, he's never going to fight. And then he said, fuck off, pal. Who told you it was okay to write a book? Who made you a journalist? I don't know why people are so concerned with what I'm doing. If you don't like the book somebody wrote, don't read it. If you don't like the TV show somebody is on, don't watch it. If you're mad that somebody is remaking Big Trouble in Little China, it's your favorite movie, guess what? Don't watch the remake. So, just to analyze this a little bit.
How do you feel about that?
I think it's really important. I think Big Trouble in Little China is fine the way that it is. Like, you really can't replace Kurt Russell. Like, he is the man. He's awesome at that role. I think the whole movie is a cool roller coaster. And I think fuck remakes for now. Nothing needs to be remade. So I'll take his advice there. I won't watch it.
Wait, are they really remaking that? Did I miss the news on that?
I hope not. I don't know. I don't know if he was using that as an analogy or what, but I don't think that they need to remake Big Trouble.
I hope not. That's like them remaking Spaceballs.
Yeah, what the hell? We don't need that. So then he goes, oh yeah, we've totally forgot this was about Punk. So he said, don't want to watch me fight? Don't watch me fight. Oh, this is terrible for the sport. We hate him. We're not going to support it. They're not going to watch it. And he says, they're going to watch it. They want to watch it.
Of course they're going to watch it.
That's the funny thing about it. They can say it's a PR stunt. They can say whatever. But I know I'm going to get my day in the octagon, and I'm going to have fun doing it. I just try to ignore all the silliness. Some days it gets to me, and I don't ignore it. And then I remember, oh, yeah, that's why you do ignore it, because I fed the trolls. Don't feed the trolls. So that's Punk today.
I get where he's coming from, and you know me. I love CM Punk. I buy his merchandise and everything. But to an extent, you got to also factor in, like, you know what business you're in. Like, people are going to criticize you, whether you do good, bad. When you do great, they're gonna criticize you and say, oh, well, you could have done better. When you do bad, they're going to go down your throat. It's just like, just deal with it, man.
Apparently, he's been blacklisted in the Undertaker magazine that they did.
I saw that, too. They don't even mention the WrestleMania match.
Yes, the Undertaker 25 Years of the Dead Man. It's a commemorative magazine where they talk about his streak and everything. And they mention the matches before and after Punk, but they don't mention Punk.
Yeah.
Not very commemorative. NXT, we've had some name changes. We have Gianno D'Addio is now called Marley. Athena is now called Adrian Reese. And the mechanics, Scott Dawson and Dash Wilder, are now just known as Dash and Dawson.
You know, Vince likes to drop a first name, so that's fine. Remember, Big E was once Big E Langston. Carlito was once Carlito Caribbean Cool. It's expected.
Yeah. In other news, Seth Petrozelli signed with WWE. He was an MMA fighter.
I did see that.
He's going to be the new striking coach at the Performance Center. So he'll be working there 3 days a week. Like I said, just minor news. No one ran anybody over this week.
China's staying out of trouble. Hogan's staying out of trouble. They're being sympathetic. They figured, you know, Halo dropped today. WWE dropped today. They're going to be good for once.
They're going to behave. They're definitely going to behave.
Watch, I bet you next week we're going to have an explosive episode with news.
Yeah, we'll definitely see.
Got a mouthful of something to say? Let the guys know. Be sure to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and subscribe to us on YouTube. TalkBrunch.com. Served hot.
Vince Russo.
Oh, God.
Reached out to Vince McMahon. And he wrote a statement about that where he said, late last night, I reached out to Vince McMahon again, even though I know that is wrong on so many levels. It's what my heart told me to do. In the past, that olive branch would have been motivated by the need of money in order to support my family. But I can tell you that isn't the case now. Currently, though, the hard work of everybody involved, thank God, the brand continues to grow. And with help from other outside projects, I am close to being able to pay my bills without taking much from what's left of my savings. In conjunction with that, I feel I have a real opportunity at iHeartRadio at the moment. One I'm really excited about. So I'm good. I'm not worried about money as I usually am right now. By putting it all in God's hands, he has provided me for me and both my family. Oh man, this is long and dreadful already. Isn't it dreadful already?
I'm sorry, I wasn't listening, honestly. Something about reaching out to Vince and money, that's what I stopped listening.
Yeah, he basically says that he had to sit on the sidelines and see the wrestling audience diminish week after week and with no ray of light anywhere in sight. And it begins to affect him personally, especially when he thinks about his former boss, Vince McMahon. And he'd be lying if he told us that he didn't love Vince, because he does. And with all of the slandering done of his name over the years by his company, that we'd probably think that he's out of his mind, and maybe he is, but unfortunately, even though he doesn't agree with their smear campaign towards him, he does understand, and he expects it. It's really hard to understand what ego entails unless we've been in the wrestling business. The level of egotistical human beings that he has worked with in the past is something that a regular blue-collar guy or gal would never understand. He's never heard Vince McMahon publicly put anybody else over. Not a talent, not an office worker, no one. On top of that, when it's time to give someone else credit for the share of success they contributed to the business, it's usually a kill and burial. The ego just won't allow that. But still, he understands it's just part of what he signed up for. And that's why he once again reached out to Vince last night. He has always been there. He's always kept his eye on the product, and he knows what it once was, and he knows what it now is, and he'll always want to help him. And that's him. That is his makeup. That is his heart. And if Vince doesn't want any of his help or anyone else's help out of pride, that's understandable. But through God, he has learned over the years that you can't do it all alone, and that's why others were put into our lives. Aren't you more touched and fulfilled now that I gave you some Vince Russo insight?
Dude, you're seriously making me about to just like put the headset down, like, turn the mic off, run down to the corner store and get a couple of beers to come back and finish this if we're going to keep talking about Russo.
It's a slow news week, man. You got to bear with me here. It's a slow news week. Orton suffered an injury while taking out the trash. He dislocated his shoulder. This isn't funny. He dislocated his shoulder. Did you not know this? You didn't hear about this?
I didn't. I knew he was injured. Like, I saw a report that said he was injured, and I figured he was injured, but I didn't think it was, like, is that the legit reason, taking out the trash?
I have read in a few places and heard from a few people that he was taking out the garbage to his curb, and that's how it got dislocated. And it's funny, because I was thinking about just the irony of somebody going, this a wrestler, to take out their garbage. You know, it's just really one of those surprising situations. You remember that show, man? The sitcom?
No.
No, you don't remember this?
No. The theme sounds familiar. I would have to watch the actual video to it.
It was about a garbage man named Rock.
Oh, Rock. Yo. Oh, wow.
So, yeah, for some reason.
You know, that's like my mom's rival.
What? Are we talking about the same thing?
Yes, yes. Rock, the garbage man. And he had the wife that was incredibly too hot for him. I remember the show.
The
now.
Bald guy, right?
Yeah.
Dies
yeah,
in Aliens 3, punching, boxing with the alien.
Yeah.
I thought that was great because we get to hear him curse like he's punching the alien. He's like, come on, you motherfucker.
Yeah. Yeah, mom. No, my mom met him in person a couple of years back, like when she was still working. And she said he was a real asshole and they got into like a whole argument.
Really? They got into an argument with that guy?
Yeah, like he has this very, he has a very entitled, like, attitude.
Holy shit. Who would have expected that, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, Orton injured with the garbage.
That totally sidetracked me, because I was going to mention about how I believe it, because I remember Orton got injured one time in the ring just pounding on the mat. Like, you know, when he does this setup for the RKO, and he used to pound the mat for you to, I guess that was his way to signal you to get up so he could RKO you. I remember, like, he sprained his wrist doing that one time.
I don't remember that. Are you sure about that one?
100% positive, because you watch it in a match. He, like, he keeps pounding, and at one point he hits, and, like, he pulls his hand back up, and he's looking at it like it's in pain. He hits the RKO, but then after the match, you see he's, like, checking his wrist, and then he was out for about 2 weeks.
You sure that's not the time that Anderson gave him that bad backdrop, and he was punching the mat in pain afterwards?
No, not then.
Hmm.
It was a one-on-one match.
That's crazy. I don't remember that at all. But yeah, he's had shoulder injuries, like, in all seriousness. Like, there could have probably been anything. It's one of those freak things. And it just happened to happen when he was taking out the garbage.
Yeah, you go through all that crazy shit in the ring, and the garbage is what gets you.
Yeah, so he had to be pulled from the Hell in a Cell event. And, yeah, he didn't work the Mexico tour this past week either. And Orton, I don't know when he's going to be back. There's really no type of deadline or anything, but it was so dislocated that it was said that it took nearly 3 hours to pop his shoulder back into place.
Shit. I can't even say I hope that guy has speedy recovery. I just hope he has a healthy recovery.
Yeah. Well, I've always liked Orton.
Yeah, like, people give Orton shit. I've actually met him in person. He's a really, like, cool, down-to-earth guy. Like, as long as you don't fucking aggravate him and be like that person that'd be like, hey, Randy, let me get a picture. Hey, can I get an autograph? Just talk to him like a regular person, and he's really cool.
There was a story from the Wrestling Observer that was saying that John Laurinaitis was the one who suggested Brock Lesnar do the Shooting Star Press at WrestleMania 19. Lesnar was talking about that on the Stone Cold podcast, but he wouldn't name who did it.
Mm.
But apparently it was Laurinaitis, is what the reports are saying. He didn't want to do the move, but he was talked into it, and it was supposed to be a WrestleMania moment. And it was.
Yeah, clearly. Yeah. I mean, botched or not, it's a part of WrestleMania history.
Oh, that's a WrestleMania moment. All right.
Yeah. This is crazy. I got a Breaking Ground going in the background.
Right.
They're up to the part where Baron Corbin's driving in his car with Norman Smiley. And Norman Smiley looks great.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah. Like, he looks like he could put on the old yellow trunks and get back in the ring.
Yeah, Breaking Ground was actually pretty decent. It wasn't bad, like, Tough Enough. There was some interesting stuff about it.
Yeah, like, I'm seeing stuff like Baron Corbin actually rides a bike. I don't know why they don't have him come out with the bike to the arena. I think I complained about that a couple episodes back.
They go into his backstory. They talk about how he wasn't, you know, he was a three-time...
He's a football player and whatnot. Yeah,
he was a three-time Golden Gloves boxing champion. He had 4 consecutive national championship games in college. They talk about his NFL reputation of being overly aggressive. You know, they go into a lot of stuff about it. He feels that he should already be a WWE superstar, and he talks about that. They do a backstory on him. They do a backstory on a guy called Tino Sabatelli, who was a former NFL player who had a 7-year career in the NFL. And in his second match in NXT, he got a concussion, and now he has to go through the WWE sports concussion protocols. So they go into his backstory a little bit. They do a segment on Sarah Del Rey and her training of the girls, and what she expects of them, and how she trains them the same way that guys train. They go into a new Falribi. You remember her? She came up in the Dirt Sheets a while back. She was the girl, the Indian girl who had, like, the racist stuff, but she said her Twitter was hacked. They go into new Falribi's storyline and what she did and what she has to do with. They go into Apollo Crews, and they show some indie clips of him. They actually show him fighting Roderick Strong in the indie.
I saw that. I think they showed that not on Battleground. I feel like they showed that on NXT also. I mean, I'm watching much wrestling that I want to say it was NXT where they had him sit down and he was talking about how his life was rough growing up because his mom didn't have that much money and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And how they would go to the store and he saw a belt and he would ask her for the belt and she would tell him she can't afford it and he would cry and leave, but she would still come back out with the belt.
Mm-hmm. They went into that on a few shows. You're absolutely right about that. The last person that they went into was Devin Taylor.
Really? I'm not up to that yet.
Yeah, and they talk about Sarah DeRay's talking about how she's having trouble and she's very injury prone. And, you know, anyone who watches NXT, she was the backstage interviewer that they had back there. She was pretty cute and stuff. And you hear when Devin Taylor's talking to Sarah DeRay, you can sort of hear in Sarah DeRay's voice, like she kind of sounds like she knew Devin Taylor was fired already. Like when she's talking about what she can work on and stuff, Sarah's just kind of very passive about it. Like, yeah, we'll see what happens. And then you see them have that talk. You see Jason Albert and Sarah DeRay have that talk about basically letting her go. And the very last shot is her being taken into a room, like a corporate office or something, and the door closing behind her. And you hear like the dude say, you know, I think you know why I'm here. And it ends. And And as we know, Devin Taylor was released a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. That's got to suck.
Apparently she wasn't coming along as much as they wanted her to. So, but it's better than Tough Enough. It's their apology for Tough Enough. But I do see a lot of the Tough Enough people there. I think that entire thing is becoming
Sarah sitting on the mat just now.
Yeah, because they signed Mata. They signed Daria. They both started at the Performance Center Tuesday. Mm. So now officially they have signed Mata, Daria, ZZ, Amanda, and as well as the winner, Sarah Lee and Josh. So why even have a contest then? You know, apparently,
but you know that's the what show. They do. It's not like this is a new thing. Remember, that's how we ended up with Miz and what's the other guy, Josh Matthews, and a lot of the people that we had. They weren't the actual winners.
But this time, almost the entire Tough Enough cast made it to NXT. You know, that doesn't make any sense to me.
I guess. I mean, like, you can't complain. They must see something in them, something that we didn't get to see on TV, and these guys are going to turn out to be great superstars.
I don't know. We'll have to see. I have no idea.
Yeah. Like, I have more faith in the people that didn't win over the ones that did. So, who knows?
And then we have Patrick Clark, on the other hand, who has heat because he was scheduled to appear at Millennium Wrestling Federation, but he no-showed. Yeah, so anyway, here's Millennium Wrestling's statement. On the night where Brock Lesnar revealed that he told WWE officials he had to fulfill wrestling camp bookings before reporting to OVW in the early 2000s, we have the unfortunate news that Patrick Clark of this year's Tough Enough series is personally choosing to no-show our Fight Night event Wednesday for WWE opportunity to be announced, despite WWE officials allowing him to appear as advertised. And then they released this clip on the guy.
Fans from around the corner and around the world, welcome to a special installment of MWF Extra. I'm Dan Marotti here at MWF Studios. In the first announcement of the day, Patrick Clark has shown that he is an athlete of no character and integrity, personally choosing to blow off our Fight Night event this Wednesday, October the 21st, not even having the class to tell us himself. Patrick has a tremendous opportunity with WWE. We were extremely happy to hear about it before Patrick ignored messages sent to him, therefore putting us in the position to reach out to friends at WWE to find out what was really going on. Out of respect to WWE, I won't go into details of Patrick's opportunity. However, as the fans, you deserve to know the truth as to what went on here. As far as this WWE opportunity goes, they'll be releasing a press release imminently. There is no worse feeling in the world when we can't deliver what we advertise to you. We work hard day in, day out, on weekends, on holidays, to give you the best experience possible, whether it be at a live event or on our video platforms. Patrick agreed to be here Wednesday night, way back on August the 31st. There were follow-up conversations regarding his transportation September 3rd and September 22nd. Patrick lied to WWE, stating that he never agreed to appear at Fight Night, despite our written correspondence proving otherwise. On September 28th, we reached out to Patrick in regards to a December live event. At that point, Patrick said there was a chance he might have the aforementioned WWE opportunity and that he would know by Monday, October the 5th, if it would happen. On October 5th, Patrick said that there was nothing new to the situation. Knowing WWE as I do, I knew there wouldn't be a problem as far as Patrick working the October 21st date. We had Daniel Bryan compete here in the MWF when he was the WWE United States Champion. That was a live event that also featured TNA and Ring of Honor champions. And believe me, that'll never happen again in wrestling unless WWE buys those companies. Paul Bearer appeared here in the MWF while under WWE. Teddy Long appeared in the MWF while under WWE contract. Al Snow competed for the MWF while under WWE contract. Awesome Kong had her final match as Awesome Kong, as she had signed a contract with WWE where she went on to beat Karma. Had a great time in our send-off for Awesome Kong back in 2009. Last Tuesday, October the 13th, we learned from a second-hand party that Patrick was going to blow out Fight Night, and he wasn't even planning on telling us what was going on. He said that he was forbidden to discuss it per his WWE date. I don't know if he was planning on not showing up at all, what his intentions were, as we had absolutely no communication with him. Patrick was furious that I reached out to WWE, saying that I played a quote-unquote political card when saying to WWE officials he was an immature 19-year-old. Well, you know what? He is. Patrick continued to lie, saying he never agreed to the appearance. Again, complete and utter BS. We don't advertise people that aren't going to be here. That hasn't been our way, and we have a 14-year track record that says otherwise, Patrick Clark. I continued 3 days' worth of conversations with WWE, and in the end, WWE was 100% correct in saying that what was negotiated between Patrick and the Millennium Wrestling Federation took place outside of their auspices. However, being the class organization that WWE is, they wouldn't only allow Patrick to appear on October 21st. They told me they want all talents to fulfill their booking, citing the recent return of the Dudley Boys. Patrick said even if the date involved in his WWE opportunity changed, he still refused to come to Boston, thus spitting on you, the fans, spitting on the MWF, a group that treated him with a great amount of respect and friendship when he was up here in August. He spit on the crew here at MWF Studios, the cameramen, the light and sound techies, the directors, the post-production people that don't get the credit they deserve. He wasted transportation and advertising dollars for fighting. At the end of my positive discussions with WWE, I tried to inform Patrick what we were planning on doing, and then he blocked me on social media, again looking like an immature coward, which really is a disappointment because I thought a lot of Patrick. Look at WWE's recent signees that have appeared here in the MWF alone. You have Rich Swann, Biff Busick, what appears to be Tommaso Ciampa. Those guys went out there, busted ass, learned things, and executed them the right way. They traveled and they sacrificed. They weren't lucky enough to land on a WWE-produced reality show to get exposure. Hopefully, Patrick's going to learn from his peers that have far more life and wrestling experience than him and become a man. He showed he wasn't tough enough this summer, but he's proven that he can be a total diva.
Okay, so I want to dissect that a little bit.
Okay.
What's your take on it first? I'm curious of how you feel about this.
I mean, I've saw the whole video before, too, so I thought it was very funny because at the end, when he says Patrick was a total diva, they actually have a picture of him with the pink shirt on and everything. He could have handled everything better, honestly. I mean, you're going into the business, you're inexperienced. WWE gave you the permission to go there and fulfill the dates that you had to fulfill. Why not do it? You can have footage for you at some point. It could turn around and they can use it as a package video like they did with, with Cruz. Like, why not take the work?
Okay. I don't think they had any right to directly reach out to WWE like that whatsoever. And I agree that what Patrick said, to do that after he told them that he wasn't allowed to say anything about his involvement with WWE, to then fucking call them is bullshit. He's right that they did play a political card there. And then he said at one point, unless I misheard him, did he say he continued 3 days worth of conversation with WWE?
Yeah,
like, three days worth of conversation. Like, that's a bit obsessive and extreme. And if it's this, if that indie company is such a great recognized indie company, then why are they stressing Patrick? You know, he name drops all of these other talents that have gone through there and that he has connections with. But here he is going onto the phone for 3 hours with WWE of a fucking Patrick? Seriously? And I also find like the statement unprofessional and petty, because especially like talking about this person and that person blocking each other on social media, it just seems an unprofessional way for a wrestling company to even address this. Like, could you imagine WWE having a statement like that that came out? It just seemed really unusual that he took that route, You know, he goes on to say that WWE is classy, which means that he's capable of identifying the difference between classy and not classy. And it's like he still handled that a little bit adolescently, don't you think?
I don't know. Maybe it's the first time that somebody canceled on him in that
manner. But still, don't be that salty about it. Look at how fucking salty he was about it, you know, and then name dropping. Oh, well, this person came through here and that person came through here, you know, so we're this and that. But then don't care. Fuck Patrick then. Why are you making a big deal? You went out of your way to contact WWE. WWE would have not have addressed it this way. And agreements in reality, which is the weakness of the indies, agreements aren't ironclad. That's why these indie events fall apart sometimes. Contracts and signatures are the way to go, and that's why the big companies always make it. Even Lucha Underground knows that. Like, they use that shit against Hernandez.
All right, with the whole TNA you know? Thing. Yeah.
Sometimes a handshake and a promise just isn't enough in life. That's the reason why... Centuries ago, we had signatures. You know, it's nothing that's different here. And I get that he feels salty about it and hurt. But then to make the thing, even though it is funny, I'm just saying from a professional standpoint, like, it's okay if you and I do shit like that. You know, but if you're trying to represent yourself.
I don't see anything wrong with it because it is some shit that we would probably.
Yeah, but it's like we're a fucking wrestling pod. We're entertainment. You know, we're doing it for fun. But when people are doing things like that, it's like you're a wrestling company and you made him pink and called him a total diva.
I mean, honestly, if that's the point,
like that.
And let's say, like, again, you have a situation where you have Patrick is supposed to show up for your event and he doesn't show. I mean, I'm not a booker, but I've been watching the wrestling business long enough to know that, hey, reach out to somebody else to fill that spot that he wasn't going to show up for.
Yeah, I would understand if this was like Alberto Del Rio or Rob Van Dam or something. But Patrick from Tough Enough didn't make your show and you're calling WWE about him.
As I said, he had so many connections with people in the past. Like, call one of those guys up and be like, hey, we were supposed to have this Patrick kid. He didn't show up. If you're in the area, would you be willing to, like, do a match? Like, take the match he was supposed to do?
Yeah.
If your reputation is that great, I'm pretty sure they'd be like, yeah, sure, I'm not doing anything. Or be like, hey, I can't do it, but I know such and such wrestler is free. I'll send them a link to you and you guys can, like, contact each other and maybe you can work something out.
Exactly. Patrick didn't make it and you're falling apart and you're all offended and stuff. The kid had an opportunity, and although WWE, being the classy company, which he stated that they are, said that Patrick can fulfill his obligations, maybe Patrick, his instincts told him that there was a sense of urgency in that, although WWE told him that maybe he should get on this shit while the door's still open.
Right.
You know, I mean
like, we're older, and that's why I'm looking at it as a person in a different perspective. Like, I wouldn't have handled it the way Patrick handled it, but I get he's a younger guy, so you're totally right. That's probably the way that he looked at it.
I probably would have handled it the way that Patrick handled it, to be honest. Patrick is not Alberto Del Rio. He's not Samoa Joe. You know what I mean? He's someone who has that stroke where it's like, sure, fulfill your other obligations in these other companies and then come work for us. He's Patrick. That's the problem, is that everyone's forgetting that he's Patrick from Tough Enough. Patrick from Tough Enough was invited to come to WWE and do this in the next week or whatever the time frame was. But this other company that he clearly didn't give too much of a shit about wanted him to fulfill his obligations. It's almost like the Kenny King situation. Sometimes you see an opportunity, you have to take it. That's the reason why you put your boys under contracts. And if you can't do it, you can't hold them down like that and, like, try to do that when it comes to an opportunity. I'm sorry, but it just doesn't really sound right the way that it was handled. Obviously, what Patrick did, it's a little bit frowned upon, but I kind of feel like the company handling it, the guy calling WWE, releasing the statement, that felt a little bit over the top, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I get that he was salty and why he did what he did, and it's not cool. It's definitely not cool, but at the end of the day, it is what it is. Patrick, he's moved on to bigger and better things. I have no ill will towards the kid. I want him to be successful. Like, we all were actually rooting for him at one point. We used to call him the Power Ranger.
Yeah, but the thing is, we've all been screwed over at one point or another by someone who we've dealt with business wise.
It's life.
And
it's
all didn't come out publicly and just say, hey, well, here's the story of what happened. First he said this, and then I said this, and then he blocked me. And it's just, I kind of really think they should have taken the high road and said, forget Patrick from Tough Enough. Not even Patrick, the winner of Tough Enough. Patrick, who didn't make it through Tough Enough. No offense to Patrick or anything, but Jesus Christ, they're really fussing over this kid going to get his opportunity in WWE.
He did throw that jab in there, too. He was like, he already proved he wasn't tough enough. Now he showed he's a total diva.
Yeah, but yet here you are.
You're showing you're a bigger diva than he is. Yeah,
He wasn't tough enough, and there are a lot of real men out there, and blah, blah, blah. But you're swooning over this guy. Why fuss over him then? It's such a contradiction of terms. I'm sorry. I mean, I don't even know why I'm invested in this. I don't give a fuck about that company or Patrick.
You're invested in it because, as you said before, it's a slow week with the
Dirt. It's a slow week. It came up. Somebody brought it up to me. I thought about it. I listened to the thing, and it just sort of, like I said, I'm not invested in any of the people involved, but I'm just saying from an outside perspective, they probably should have just let Patrick be and not worried that much about it. It reflects bad on them doing it that way, even if they were right. And I'm not saying they are, because it's basically up for debate, but it just looks bad on them.
Yeah.
We've seen some new GFW title belts. I'm really excited about that, man. And we got Magnus, who's the GFW global champion. We have Christina Von Erie, who is the GFW women's champ.
I didn't know she still wrestled.
Yeah, she's the GFW women's champ. We have the Bollywood Boys, who are the GFW tag team champions. And we have PJ Black, a.k.a. Justin Gabriel, who is the GFW Next Gen Champion. And they're all green titles. No pun intended. Maybe it was. Maybe it wasn't. Sometimes these things just fall into my lap. But, yeah, literally, they're all green titles. That is the color scheme of the titles.
Even the women's title?
I believe the women's title. Wasn't it green? I don't remember.
I didn't see it. I only saw the world title and the tag titles. And I like the tag titles.
Yeah, they look good, you know. They're green titles. Yeah. And that's also the color.
That's. I was going to say it looks better. I think I said this on a post on Facebook. It looks better than the penny title that WWE has for their tag team titles.
Yeah. In other news, we have Ronda Rousey, who's going back to WWE. She says, well, not that she's going back, but that she wants to go back. She's saying that after getting a taste of it, she's definitely going to find a way to get back there. And she doesn't know how or when, but she thinks that any true wrestling fans wouldn't want to know. They'd want to be surprised. But she has to get back there somehow. So it's the opposite of what Dana said.
Not to say Dana's eating his words right now.
Yeah.
Now you learned your lesson. Don't speak for people.
Yeah. AJ Styles will not be competing at this week's Ring of Honor tapings due to an injury.
Yeah, I heard about that.
They announced at Friday's Glory by Honor tapings that he suffered some sort of an injury. No one knows what it is, but they mentioned that he will be competing for the Ring of Honor title at Final Battle against Jay Lethal.
There's nothing too serious then.
Yeah. Seth Rollins was interviewed recently and he was asked about how he felt about a match with AJ Styles. And he said that he doesn't talk to AJ on a regular basis, but that he thinks that he's doing pretty all right in New Japan with the Bullet Club and with Ring of Honor. And that he's made a great career for himself just doing his thing, doing AJ. And that he's someone that he'd love to work with, especially at this stage in their careers. And that he thinks they're both pretty much at the top of their game, so it'd be cool. But you never know. I think I'd like to see it. Yeah, of course. There's money in that match. We got to get AJ.
I think like he's next to get signed, honestly.
You think so?
I mean, it may not be soon, but I can't think of any other big name prospect that they would take other than him.
Hmm. I mean, it would be interesting, right?
Yeah. I mean, let the hype die down around them signing Samoa Joe and then bring him in.
Yeah, well, there's also Bobby Roode. Let's not forget about that. That's a good possibility.
Oh, yeah.
I'd like to see something
like that. And now that they have a James Storm, it is a possibility.
Yeah, why not, right?
Mm-hmm. Because I'm pretty sure a part of them getting Joe was because of what's-his-face that they had just signed. I'm forgetting his name at the moment.
Anyway, I also wanted to clarify that Ezekiel Jackson is not retired. There's conflicting reports, and promoter Bill Burns said that Ezekiel Jackson is still taking bookings through Burns's email address. So take that for what you will. Just wanted to clarify since it's something that we covered on here before. So in other news, it's being reported that Dean Ambrose is going to be one of the top baby faces during John Cena's absence. So he's going to be protected for a while and they're going to start pushing him, hopefully. Like that would be something that I would like to see.
I mean, with Orton out of the picture, and then, like you said, Cena out of the picture, that is the most logical person to push, other than Roman Reigns, who's getting the push also.
Yeah, rumors are Nikki Bella is going to be taking time off while Cena's out, because after Hell in a Cell, she tweeted, she said, "You put up a tough fight, Charlotte. Hold on to that title, because my journey isn't over. I feel as if I lost it all, and it's time to regroup. I'll be back." So some people are speculating that this means that she's going to be gone or out for a little while or something of that nature.
I did hear some rumblings about she has a project totally unrelated to whatever it is that Cena's taking time off for.
Also, Tom Phillips was removed from WWE's YouTube show Five Things and replaced by Kyle Edwards. He was also removed from SmackDown and replaced by Rich Brennan. And Phillips tweeted and he said, Five Things is in good hands with my friend Kyle Edwards. Don't worry, I'm not going anywhere. What's next? Stay tuned. So you better hope that what's next isn't TNA.
Yeah. The next tweet will be moving on to bigger and better things. And that will be the third man on the commentary team over there.
All right. So before we get out of here, let's cover Hell in a Cell. I think the main most important thing to do here. The pre-show was decent. You know, I got to watch it. I was watching it, actually calling it on the air during the Rant EM thing that we were doing. And we spoke about it as it was going on. It was a good match. We called some of the stuff there. No complaints whatsoever. I would say definitely check that out if you want some details on it. First match of the main card was the Cena U.S. title match, which little did we expect it, but out comes Zeb Coulter in a mobile chair.
I was very disappointed at that moment.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Mainly because, I thought it was just he was in character, but I'm assuming something must have happened to Zeb that we don't know about. Yeah. And he has to be in that wheelchair at all times now, in that that little car.
Yeah, that's what I figured. I didn't think that was a work or anything. And it was a decent match. It was what you would expect, though. Rio came out and he did his thing. I wasn't expecting him to come back.
Yeah, we weren't expecting. That's why I said I got disappointed, because when he came out, I was like, really? I thought Jack Swagger, they were repairing him with Jack Swagger. And I didn't think Jack Swagger was going to win the title, but I just thought that this was the person that they were going to put in the place.
Yeah, me too. That's totally what I was all about. I was thinking, oh man, we're going to get this again and it's not going to work. Help me. But apparently Alberto Del Rio is out of Lucha Underground and he was blaming Money and Creative for the downfall of their situation together. He's been telling promoters that he's not going to be taking any bookings because he wanted to spend time with his family. But apparently Money played some sort of a factor in this because he came back to WWE.
I was about to say he is with his family. WWE is a well-known family-oriented business.
Yeah, Lucha Underground was his main source of income, but both parties had a falling out. He's still the mega champion for AAA. Del Rio's WWE contract allows him to finish up other contractual obligations, and it also calls for less dates working. But AAA was only informed of Del Rio's return 30 minutes before Hell in a Cell started. And Jim Ross's take on it is that he's not totally surprised to see Del Rio back in WWE after leaving Lucha Underground over differences, which usually concerns the two C's, cash and creative. And he said Alberto Del Rio got a short, decisive victory over John Cena, who's taking some well-deserved time off to win the U.S. title. And he said he suggested WWE continue the U.S. title open challenge with Del Rio, who takes on the task of continuing to rehabilitate the United States title. It was a good way to start the show, and if Del Rio turns on Zeb, then the WWE will have a better chance to run with Del Rio as a main event level fan favorite distinction. This would be a nice ring segment on Raw. And we know we didn't get that, so.
Yeah, that's what they said. I don't know about all that.
Yeah. It's being said that really returning to WWE was his only way to make any money again, since there all of those other shit happened that we talked about last week.
Yeah.
You know, him not liking to have to fly coach, things of that nature. You know? He's a baller, man, you know? You have to be a baller.
Yeah, he gets to go back to WWE and be a baller.
Yeah, nah.
Born into wealth, WWE superstar Alberto Del Rio has everything money can buy. He swims in pools filled with champagne. He eats his nachos with only the finest caviar. He also has a personal ring announcer who does a lot more than announce. He'll have to get his money the hard way. Earn it.
That's so appropriate. I'm loving it. That is so appropriate. Anyway, rolling down the card, we next had Roman Reigns against Bray Wyatt. What do you think of this?
It was a decent match. I thought that was going to be the sleeper match of the whole pay-per-view, but it was actually a pretty decent match. They had some cool spots, like the spear through the table off the apron, the stuff with the kendo stick where they set up the kendo stick and smash through it. Even the ending where I don't know what Bray was trying to do when he set one up on the middle turnbuckle and the other one up on the top. I know he was going to try and ram Roman's head into the top one, which Roman reversed on him and rammed him into it before he hit the spear for the win.
Yeah.
But, yeah, pretty decent match.
Yeah, I like Reigns' dropkick to the outside, but Bray's selling does need some work. The way he was walking away as the recoil to the dropkick just looked like shit. And then the funny thing is they replay it. You know, he just sort of walks away looking stupid. And Reigns rushing Bray into the chair that they set up, like by sticking it into the side of the cage.
Into the actual thing, yeah.
That was pretty decent, too. And then Bray dual-wielding the kendo sticks.
That was pretty cool, too. Reigns, he was, like, tapping it.
Yeah, I mean, Reigns dual-wielding the kendo sticks on Bray, whipping his ass and stuff. And then Reigns getting chokeslammed from the side of the apron through the table looked like a rough bump.
Was that a chokeslam? I never know whether to call that move a chokeslam or a sambo suplex or what.
That looks like a chokeslam. I just call it a chokeslam, you know. And then Bray Wyatt goes through a table shortly after that. It was crazy. There was actually a legit ref bump. Did you see that?
I didn't notice the ref bump.
Yeah, at one point after, I forget what the spot was, but Roman Reigns pins Bray Wyatt and Bray Wyatt kicks out so hard that Roman Reigns flies and hits the ref and he sort of bumps him.
You know what it was? I remember the spot now. I saw it and thought nothing of it.
I remember the spot now. He Superman punched Bray Wyatt, and then when Bray kicked out, Roman Reigns kind of recoiled into the air and slams into Little Nate, Charles Robinson. But yeah, Reigns spears Bray from the top of the apron through a table on the outside, and that was very dangerous. That was a very dangerous spot there. And they both look like they hit their head there.
Yeah.
Apparently they're okay.
Nothing too serious.
Yeah, at one point, Wyatt set up the two candlesticks in the corner, or if you're an ECW fan, Singapore canes. And then he tried to impale Reigns with them, but Reigns counter pulled one out, hit Bray with it, drove him into the other one that was still set up, and he went over with the spear. I thought that was good. They both did really good in this match.
Yeah, like I said, it totally surprised me. It didn't blow my mind, but it totally turned out to not be the sleeper match, which is a good thing.
Very, very good thing. Very good. After that, they gave us that 25 years of Undertaker video package, which they're being very cryptic about if this is going to be his retirement or what's going on. They didn't say anything at this point. They just showed 25 years of Undertaker.
Yeah, I noticed they kept making emphasis later on that this is going to be the last Hell in a Cell that Undertaker does.
It could be. I mean, I don't know for sure, though.
Yeah. Only Undertaker himself truly knows.
Yeah, pretty much. At this point, I've been hearing that he's going to retire since WrestleMania 14.
Yeah, I was just about to mention that, how we've heard in the past that he wanted to stop like 5 years ago, 8 years ago, 10 years ago, and he's still here.
We started at the bottom, now we're here.
And like what, like this year he's pulling out more dates than he pulled out the previous year, so I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I think it'll be fine. He seems to be doing better. I mean, the matches weren't fantastic, but they weren't shit like a few of the middle ones that we saw.
Want to chat with the guys? Then be sure to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and subscribe to us on YouTube. TalkBrunch.com.
Anyway, before we jump too far ahead, next was New Day against the Dudleys.
I gotta say, I don't find the New Day that entertaining without Woods.
I still do. Big E's the one who does it for me. I like when the voice cracked. LA! And the Kofi cartoon shirt. We talked about this last night, but the Kofi cartoon shirt. Yeah, of the New Day on the unicorn wearing sunglasses. Oh, man. I need me one of those. That is a shirt right there. That is a shirt.
My wife was like, oh, look at the shirt. I got to get that. So I'm probably going to have that shirt in the house like next week.
Mm-hmm. That'll be great. I like when Biggie's coming down the ramp and he says, today was a sad day. As sad as what the Lakers have become. And then he talks about how the trombone is all they have left of Woods and that this is his essence. And they talk about the Caucasian Kamala. You heard the Caucasian Kamala?
Yeah, when I saw you post that on Facebook, I was like, what the hell is he talking about? And then, because I didn't watch the match live. So when I watched it later on, I was like, oh, okay, it makes sense now.
Caucasian Kamala. That's so funny. The Dudleys at one point in the match had this ugly botched double team. I'm not even sure what the hell that was they were trying to do, but it didn't work.
Yeah, I don't know. And they called it, the commentary team, I think JBL called it butt ugly. It looked like Bubba was setting up for a neck breaker. And then I don't know where D-Von got confused, but D-Von looked like he went to go do a leg drop. Right. And then he fell on his ass. And then Bubba was still kind of holding up Kofi. And then he just like drops him. And it's like, well, that's botched. Let's just keep the match going.
They're lucky they didn't hurt Kofi with that shit.
I mean, at that, there would have been no way to hurt him unless Bubba dropped him when D-Von did the leg drop. And it wasn't even, it was more like a famouser than a leg drop. I don't know what the move was supposed to be. It was just nothing. I don't know what it was supposed to be.
It was ugly. That's what we're going to call it from now. We're going to call it ugly.
The butt ugly.
Yeah. The booty. Other than that, it was what you would have expected from the match.
Like right after they fucked that up, I think like Biggie just saved the awkwardness with the when he does the shoulder check and then he just starts dancing in the middle of the ring.
Yeah, yeah. They need to start calling him Big-er because you notice how much fucking bigger Biggie's becoming?
Yeah.
He should be Big-er now. I mean, holy crap. But there was a lot of trombone antics and stuff. At one point, Kofi throws the trombone.
The classic Eddie Guerrero move.
Yeah, D-Von and lays down like he hit me and the ref doesn't know what to do. And it's all this crazy stuff that's going on as far as that. And Big E, just to show the finish, Big E hits D-Von with the trombone and Kofi hits the Trouble in Paradise on Bubba and goes
very nice looking Trouble in Paradise. I feel like I don't see that move that often anymore.
Well, he's always kept it classy. You know, I always thought he was good for him. Next we had Nikki against Charlotte. Good match, decent match. I like the flare flip over the top rope, but recoiling back and then charging at Nikki with the big boot, basically.
That is a flare flip. I don't know why I looked at it and I called it the HBK flip. Can remember HBK used to hit the corner like that also.
Yeah, no, that was definitely shades of her father, as they would say.
Yeah, I like the landing into the big boot with that, though. That was cool.
Yeah, and Charlotte was giving Nikki those hard wrestling strikes. Like the chops, man. She was giving her father's chops. They were wooing for those. At some point, Charlotte got a nose injury. I couldn't exactly pinpoint where.
Yeah, it looked like she had like a cut on the front of her nose.
Yeah, that top rope Hurricane Rana they did, it looked a little off. I don't know if it was supposed to
look like that.
No,
it definitely looked off. Like, it was sloppy. It was real, real sloppy. And they replayed that too.
Yeah, it looked better in the replay.
You thought so?
Yeah, it looked better in the replay for some reason. Maybe it was the angles, camera angle thing. A lot of this has to do with camera angles.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought they bumped heads until I saw it in the replay, and then it looks
She did a Frankensteiner and landed on like her feet and her butt, like in a seated position, and Nikki just kind of fell back. I thought Nikki was supposed to do more of a flip with her, but I guess not.
Yeah, and then we had the Alabama Slam on the side of the apron on Charlotte from Nikki. That was a violent move.
That's when I noticed that she was actually bleeding.
Yeah, really rough, sloppy, a little sloppy, but a rough match. Charlotte went over with the figure eight. Nothing wrong with it. Really decent. You know, I have no complaints.
I like how she hit the figure eight, though. She was Nikki was going for the rack attack and she just like slips off of her, drops her, and then puts it into the figure eight. I thought that was cool.
Yeah. So next we had Rollins against Kane. What did you think of this?
The match went as expected. The one cool part that I liked was when Kane took him to the outside and he was setting up for the choke slam through the table. Rollins slipped out between his legs and powerbombed him through the Spanish announce table. That was like the coolest part of the whole match. And then when he went for the frog splash later on in the match, I thought he was going to go for the Phoenix splash, but it was a frog splash, which again, I thought Kane was going to reverse into a choke slam, but he didn't. So I thought it was cool that he hit it and got a two count off of it.
Yeah, that was very cool. I like when he had his sling blade as always. I like the fact that he has a sling blade. I guess we're not going to have to worry about Hideo Itami using his because he's not around. I always wondered if they would both have one, which I think is okay as well. It's not that big of a deal.
Remember, Balor has one too.
Yeah. Yeah, so everyone has one, I guess. There are quite a few people that use it. I think Balor actually uses it more. I've only seen Hideo break it out once. And now that I'm thinking about it, might not have even been in NXT.
So, yeah, Balor definitely does it more out of the group of guys that does it. And it's funny because I remember JTG was the only one doing that move at one point.
Wow, there's a name drop right there.
You know, I downloaded that book and I still haven't read it.
Yeah, it's a good book, man. I read it the first day. We talked about it.
Yeah, I was reading it. Like, I got about maybe 2-3 chapters in and I was like, this is really interesting. And I just never got back to it. I don't know why.
Yeah, believe me, get back to it, man. Good book. But yeah, overall, I thought it was good. Rollins and Kane are professionals, man. You get a professional match out of this. As much as people complain, I thought the storyline was done really good. I like the split personality thing. It's not really a split personality thing. It's Kane screwing with him. So it's not, nothing.
Yeah,
like
yeah. I like how as the match like winded, not the match itself, but as the storyline winded down, that Rollins kept pointing that out, that he was like, it's not a dual personality thing. Like corporate Kane and Demon Kane are the same person. You're just messing with me.
Yeah, I like the fact that when Kane started taking apart the announce table, Kane goes, Kane, the Spanish announce table's right there. And then Kane, that's when the, when what you happen, what you mentioned happens. Kane slides out from under, Rollins slides out from under
Rollins
Kane.
Rollins slides out and hits the powerbomb. Yeah, yeah,
onto the Spanish announce table, but it doesn't break because he sort of hits the corner of it. You know, and it doesn't look good. It looks like it sucks. But long story short, Rollins goes over with the pedigree. It was a good match.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was the end of corporate Kane, right?
Well, yeah, I can't even say for now. Like, that's the end of corporate Kane. I guess we're gonna get back. We're gonna go back to having Demon Kane on the roster full time.
Yeah, it looks that way.
Which sucks because it took me a while, but the character was growing on me.
Yeah, and then we had Ryback versus Kevin Owens, which much like this rundown is gonna be short and sweet. Owens.
The match went as expected. Honestly, I think this was more the sleeper match, and that's taking nothing away from it. It was a good match.
It was very short. Owens retains with the pop up powerbomb, and
yeah, it was a weak looking pop up powerbomb too. Like he threw him up and kind of like slipped. He didn't slip, but Ryback didn't go up as high as I guess he wanted him to.
Yeah. Well, now we get into the main event, which was Taker versus Lesnar, which was definitely violent yeah. ass match.
I think Lesnar was busted open, what, like two minutes into the start of the match?
Very early by getting knocked into the ring post, the same spot that he loves to bang his head in with. by the way, Lesnar had to get 9 stitches for that. And Taker was busted open shortly after that. And Vince and Kevin Dunn were reported as freaking out over this, because they have that no blood policy. So Dunn was screaming for a doctor to get out there. And then sending the doctor out there didn't really do anything because Lesnar shoved the doctor down after that. And then the doctor didn't come back.
He's like, I'm not messing with this guy.
Yeah, we're not going to mess with this guy at all, you know? And there were cool spots. I like the fact that Lesnar beat his way out of Hell's Gate. I thought that the Undertaker's choke slam on the exposed ring was really cool. Unfortunately,
I believe this is like the first... Well, I want to say the second time I've actually seen an exposed ring in WWE. First was when the Nexus attacked John Cena.
Yeah, and unfortunately the Tombstone missed the mark.
Yeah, yeah.
Like he was supposed to get him right on the end there, I think, but instead he catches a little bit more of the mat.
I mean, taking nothing away from the overall match, it was a pretty good match. I can't complain. Like, I was going to come on and complain because I saw somebody else complain about it too, and I was like, they have a point. Whereas, like, I thought at pay-per-views, Your world heavyweight champion should be in the main event. I have no problem with the Hell in a Cell match with Undertaker and Brock Lesnar being in the main event, actually. It turned out to be a very, very good match.
Yeah, I mean, it was decent. It was definitely decent.
I mean, if I booked it and you wanted to do the Kane, Seth Rollins thing, make that a Hell in a Cell match also and put that as your main event. But, like I said, can't complain. I was happy with the way the card was set up.
Yeah, and Lesnar, it surprised me that he had the low blow at the end there. And then
I knew that was going to happen because Paul Heyman kept emphasizing too much about how Brock Lesnar didn't have to do that to beat The Undertaker.
Yeah, and then after that, Lesnar hits him with the F5 on the exposed mat for the win. And then the fans are giving him his send-off and the thank you Taker and everything. And out of nowhere, the Wyatts come in and they kick his ass really badly. All 4 Wyatts together jump The Undertaker.
Oh, wait, yeah, which we didn't report that in our dirt sheet stuff about Luke Harper.
What about him?
He had it was a family issue. That's why he was missing the week before.
What was the family issue?
They didn't get too much into detail. They was just saying that it's a family issue. It wasn't anything too serious. I'm assuming maybe somebody got injured. Nobody died or anything like that. But he couldn't make the show. He just had to be there for that family member.
Okay, well, I'm glad he was able to make it. Good guy.
Yeah, that's what they said. They had what's-his-name backstage for weeks, not ready to come back, but I guess they weren't going to use him right away, Eric Rowan. But because Harper had the emergency, they just threw him into TV, and it worked out, because, like, look, now he got to play part of this bigger angle at the end of the pay-per-view.
Yeah, and I don't believe that they didn't plan to bring him out. They're only weeks away from Survivor Series when you really measure it, or a month away from Survivor Series. They needed four people in a team. They meant to bring him out. You know, that's
who do you think? So you know it's going to be the Wyatts versus, I guess, Undertaker, Kane. Who do you think the other two guys are going to be?
I thought it would be Dean Ambrose and Roman Reigns, but Roman Reigns is in the other feud right now. I'm still not really sure what they're going to do. Some people were saying Sting and Roman Reigns.
Okay.
Yeah, just randomly throw whoever the hell in there. Right?
I could see Sting in there, but I don't think they're going to risk putting Sting in. No, I could see it working. They put Sting in there. He doesn't have to stay in for a big majority of the match. He can stare in the apron and rest or whatever, come in, hit his spot, and go back in the corner. Just like they used to do with Hogan when he was winding down and they knew he couldn't wrestle as much.
Yeah. Well, they could do something here. I mean, they have potential. Survivor Series has always been my favorite pay-per-view, so I don't want them to screw anything up. I want this to be an enjoyable experience.
Yeah.
So before we wrap up here, we'll just run down some of the Raw results real quick. Throw an opinion anywhere you feel fit. The Authority opened up the show. They introduced Rollins. They praised him. They said how he cleaned out the whole roster. They announced their little tournament for the number one contender spot and how it's going to end in a fatal four-way. And then Reigns comes out to annoy us and foreshadow the fact that he's going to win the whole fucking thing.
Yeah.
And then the first match is Roman Reigns against Kofi. And I got to say, the New Day thing just gets funnier and funnier for me. Again, like I said, during the pay-per-view, I just think they're really good together. I like it a lot. The first drop kick looked legit. Like, it looked like it caught Reigns in the face when
it was a beautiful drop kick.
Yeah. I also forgot to mention, he didn't do this on Raw, I don't believe, but during the Hell in a Cell, I like the hopscotch drop that he's doing now instead of the boom drop. Like, he does, he does like a hopscotch onto the leg drop now.
Funny that stuff. Makes me want to check WWE 2K16 and see if he does that. I doubt it.
He just broke that out last night, man. He ain't gonna have that shit on there. Yeah, Big E gets Superman punched off of the ropes. Reigns turns around and ducks Trouble in Paradise and recoils off of the ropes towards Kofi.
That's fair. Yeah, that was a very cool spot.
Yeah, exceptionally good match. I enjoyed it. It went very well. Very athletic. Really good for Raw.
Yeah.
The Miz has
Kofi. He never disappoints.
Yeah. The Miz had his WWE 2K16 segment. I thought this was done very lazy. He's just sitting there playing the game for a second, and later on, predictably, because we knew it was going to happen, Stone Cold pops up.
Yeah, he wins the match. I guess he's playing the showcase mode, and then he goes, "Oh, and that's the bottom." Does he say it? That's the bottom line? Because Stone Cold says so, but you can see he's lip syncing it.
And the real Stone Cold comes up. Anyway, they have a little comedic segment there. At least Michael Cole got to plug up, up, down, down, and how they'll see some coverage of the game on there.
I thought so that was cool. Yeah.
And yeah, this is. I actually messaged you at this point. There was a commercial that came on that kind of bothered me that I wanted to talk about a little bit. There's these commercials. There's just something that was on my mind where, like, they fuck with, like, the dead bodies of mice. And I've seen these commercials before, but much like commentary, when it gets bad, I don't really watch commercials during Raw. I'm so used to the second screen. I just blank them out and look at my phone or something. But, and I've seen it and I didn't realize what they were doing, but I looked up and, like, you hear the narrator go, "What do we do with the bodies of these dead mice?" And then he, like, attached one to, like, a little rocket, dead mouse, and then just fucking shot him into there and blew him up.
It was, and like, an Evel Knievel type rocket. I think they dressed him up in a little suit and everything.
Who does that as a mouse poison commercial? Like, it almost seems dark in a way. Like, yeah, it's fake and everything, but isn't it weird to just think that you're watching a human hand fuck with, like, a dead mouse and attach him to a little rocket and blow up his corpse, and that this is the advertisement for the mice poison? What the fuck am I watching here? I don't need you to blow up a fucking dead body of a mouse to get me to buy this shit.
And then, like, after that, they show you an ad for Tostinos.
Like, who made this mouse poison? Dennis the Menace? Attaching a fucking dead body of a mouse to a rocket and shooting him into the air. Who thought of that, man? That's the kind of person who grows up to be like a Michael Myers.
I'm surprised you didn't throw in the Dennis the Menace old cartoon theme song after you said that.
Oh, screw that cartoon. Like, going back to that. That was an annoying song. I didn't even like it when I was a kid.
Oh, man. I like the cartoon, though.
Yeah, it was decent. He was drawn well. He was drawn, like, in the comic strips.
Yeah.
All right, so then we have Cesaro against Owens, and it was a good match. Very physical.
Actually, good match, but I actually thought Cesaro was going to go over.
Did you now? Why?
Yeah, I figured Owens already had a belt. They're not going to put somebody with a belt into the Fatal 4-Way because clearly they're not going to win. So yeah, I thought that like by having Owens win, it was predictable that he wasn't going to win the main event.
No, I mean, they're always high on Owens, and they've always dropped Cesaro as good as he is, so I kind of, it fell
yeah,
the way that I thought.
It's very weird with Cesaro, because it's like one week they'll give him the push, then he'll get a push the next week, and then it's like he gets buried, and then he gets a push, and then it's buried, and then he gets a push. So I don't know, I guess I lost track of the last time he got a push.
He gets a win every now and then, you can say.
Yeah, it's not always consistent, like he doesn't have a hot streak on his wins.
No, he definitely doesn't. Who knows what they're going to do as far as that.
Anyway, I'm going to change it in 2K16.
But anyway, Team PCB backstage segment where Paige is being remorseful and apologizing to her people, which leads into PCB versus Team Bella. What basically happens is Charlotte has that leg drop that looked like she hit Fox in the face at one point. I don't know if you saw that. There was some We Won Becky chants. And eventually Becky does get the hot tag, but Nikki goes over with the rack attack on Becky. And then Paige randomly just beats up Charlotte and hits her. And
hits her with the rampage, then picks up Becky and hits her with the rampage too.
Yeah, and then puts Charlotte into the PTO.
Yeah.
So she's full-fledged heel now. I think that's the end of the PCB.
I don't know. I wasn't a fan of the Divas Revolution storyline because it started off strong and then like it really faltered out bad. And then like I guess they tried to do the split and it was like, okay, you had Paige split away from the group just for her to come back to the group for a week and a half just to leave the group again. Like, I don't get it.
Yeah, they should have let her be a wild card that they never know if she's going to help or not, as opposed to just making her beat their asses and definitively end the group.
Yeah. It was like they didn't like the way they ended the group the first time, so they was like, hey, let's do a take two with it.
A very short take two.
Yeah.
So next we had Zeb and Del Rio come out, and I was surprised Zeb was there because I thought that was going to be a one-off, but he wheeled his ass out there again.
With his Mexican-American flag.
Yeah, they called themselves the Mex-Americans, and it was Neville versus Del Rio. I think Zeb looks completely out of place in this, like wheeling himself out there with a Mexican dude, with a half Mexican American flag.
I don't know. It's like, why would you agree to that if you know you're not mobile as before?
So much forced and thrown together stuff lately. You know, like with the Rusev Lana, the Neville Del Rio American Mexicans, whatever the hell. You know, the fact that he fist bumps with him before he goes to the match is also shite. Like, really? Like, you're walking next to this dude who's wheeling and stuff, and then the two of you fist bump. It just seems so weird and out of place.
Considering what his whole gimmick was before.
Yeah, well, it was an alright match. Del Rio went over with some sort of a double stomp to Neville's head from the top turnbuckle while Neville was tangled up in sort of a Tree of Woe style position.
Yeah, and they said Del Rio's famous for doing that.
Since when? Famous.
Yeah, I was about to say, I guess in the Indies. Doing it that often. He's done it in the past, but it's not like it was a signature move of his that he would bust out every month.
No, it definitely wasn't.
He's never won a match off of that, as far as I can remember.
Yeah, they're trying to make him an even more aggressive Del Rio.
I guess, because notice he hasn't won with the cross arm breaker.
No, he hasn't won with that. Well, I mean, he's only been back for a couple of matches. I think
it's only his second match, yeah.
Yeah, we'll let them. We'll see if they let him keep his submission or what happens. They usually keep submissions no matter what.
Yeah. But they've been mentioning it. So I guess like by the third match, if he's on a match on SmackDown or maybe Raw next week, you'll see him use it. Depending on who he's facing, too. I guess they don't want certain people to lose to a submission.
Yeah.
Like Cena tapping out would make him look weak. And then I guess like Neville must have some type of protection where they don't want him to tap out either.
Yeah, probably. So I don't think Neville's protected, though. He seems to be completely lost in the shuffle, unfortunately.
Yeah, I know he's doing like the weird storylines with Stardust and the Ascension, and then they kind of threw him to fight Barrett, and now he's fighting Del Rio. Next week he's probably going to be fighting Stardust again. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, the next match after that is a six-man tag match with Sheamus, Barrett, and Rusev against the Dudleys and Ryback. It was good. It was what you would expect. The finish was when Ryback and Devon go to get the tables. Barrett rolled up Bubba from behind and got the tights.
Yeah, I knew it was going to end like that. I was like, you know how the match is going to end when he tells him go get the tables, and it's not a table match. Like, I knew it was going to end up like that.
Yeah, exactly. Get the tights. So then we have a Bray Wyatt segment, and Demon Kane comes out and cuts him off from his preaching, and then Kane gets jumped by all of the Wyatts, exactly like Undertaker the night before, and gets carried away. Don't know what the hell's going on here. This better have some sort of a good payoff.
Yeah, it's like when you drag them away and then you don't bring them back the following night, it's like, am I supposed to assume that you're keeping them in your basement?
Yeah, really. And then we had Big E against Ziggler, and Summer Rae and Tyler Breeze come to ringside with their entire little club style set up with a bodyguard standing there. And that was decent enough. Ziggler goes over with the zigzag on that one.
Yeah, that match went as expected. I don't know why I was so amused at the fact that Big E went out and got a, and like took a drink of Tyler's, took a sip of Tyler's drink.
Yeah, right. And, I mean, it was funny because he did it all sloppily, like, blah, like an animal, and slammed it back down, like, poof, fuck your drink.
Then it was like, the security guard didn't even do anything to stop him. I'm like, because it's Big fucking E. Would you try to stop him?
Yeah, security guard was like, I don't do drinks. That's not on the list, bro. And then we had that Rise Above Cancer segment, which they're overdoing. It's overstaying its welcome. They need to stop rising against hate, rising against cancer, rising against bullying.
It was cool that it's bittersweet. I liked it because it was Titus. And I think back to when you always used to like make fun of Titus because he was always only on the second screen. So it's good to actually see him in the ring, and he had a little segment near the end of the show.
You know what? You can be supportive of things without hamming it up, though. You know what I mean? They're a little too hammy now. WWE's becoming hammy.
But they figured he's the most likable guy that they could have gotten to do that. Like, Reigns didn't go over when he did it, so they was like, hey, let's take this guy.
Yeah, but he was hammy. You know what I mean? Like, they're all swaying back and forth. All the wrestlers are out there. They're all like, we are the world.
And he tried to get them to do the Millions of Dollars Dream. I saw, like, the one lady on the far left looked like she almost fell.
Yeah, you know, while they're all swaying and stuff, you know? Like, when I watch Raw, you know what I mean? Like, I want to have the whole Raw is War. You know what I mean? I want to hear, there's a voice of being changing our life. You know, get the fuck out of here. Watch a Monday Night Raw, man. Like, get the wrestling. Like, I get it. Do that shit once. Do it one fucking time,
save
please.
It. Save it for SmackDown.
Don't do that shit multiple times.
Nobody's
you know?
Watching.
Yeah, not pissing me off, man. Like, I don't care anymore. This is it. From now on, anyone who listens to this, I'm going to start being a dick about that. Like, I've been really patient. The Connor thing, which was really sad and depressing. We were patient. We were classy about that. All of these other things that have come up since, the constant reminders of death when they're supposed to be a product that makes us escape from reality and not worry about our troubles. A lot of us, like people who have attended funerals this week, one of our troubles may be death. So maybe on your show, don't have something that talks about fucking death every hour. Kind of like your intermission is death, you know? Like, isn't that awful?
Right, because it was the segment, and then that was it, right? They went to another commercial break and then came back.
Yeah, fuck that. Don't do that. I'm sorry, but that's it. It's just a little bit too much saturation. I should be able to say something about it. I pay my $9.99. I bought the fucking $90 video game. I think that at this point, I can have a right to say that I don't want to fucking hear about death all the time. I'm very conscious of it. But that doesn't mean that that's something that I want to hear about. Imagine if you were watching The Simpsons on Sunday and then in the middle, they just started talking about Iraq. And it'd be like, what the fuck? Like, come on, it's my Sunday. Like, I don't want to hear about it on a consistent basis like this. There's a long time fan speaking and I'm a little oversaturated in all of the talk about rising above things every single week, doing entire segments. And if you're going to do something, get someone who's more fucking creative to put something together that can actually be entertaining, but can still make a point. Like, remember back years ago, and I believe on CBS, they had a special where all of the cartoon characters, Michelangelo and a bunch of cartoon characters, came to life to tell kids not to do drugs and shit.
Holy fuck, why do you remember that?
Why do I remember that? But do you remember how even though that was kind of hokey, you watched it and it was entertaining enough that you kept watching it because you were like, yeah, this is well done. Like the animation's well done, the concept, it led you into that direction without you feeling like an asshole for watching it. Or even Captain Planet, the way they talked about no pollution, but it was cool. You know, you got to see the rings and the fire and the wind and the different
Everybody
elements.
Wanted to be Wheeler and you know, everybody wanted to date Linka.
You know, they had time travel in it. They came out as like, you know, he came out like the superhero form. They kicked ass. It was awesome. But the message behind it was that looting and polluting is not the way. here's what Captain Planet has to say. You know why I remember that? Because it was a fucking good show.
That's for the time, at least. Too.
With a catchy theme. You see what I mean? How they can get you a message that's catchy and keep you attentive? You have a bunch of wrestlers that I'm watching swaying back and forth. You have Jon Moxley from CZW out there swaying back and forth and shit with a bunch of cancer survivors. And you know what I mean? Come, give me a break.
Yo, I swear at one point, I forget who he was talking to, but you see him when Titus starts doing the little sway left and right. Like, he looked to the other guy next to him and he was like, can't believe I went from CZW to I'm standing here in the ring doing this shit, eh? He was like, I didn't even have a match tonight, but look at this shit. This is what they call me out here for.
Yeah, you know, like, it's, I'm sorry. I'm not going to be sensitive to this. We're not on here. If you're sensitive, viewers, get the fuck off of this. Like, we're not going to be sensitive about this kind of stuff.
We're going
to
assume if you're a sensitive viewer and this isn't your first episode, like, come on, man. You know, this was coming.
I'm sitting here watching a bunch of women in pink hold hands for 10 minutes while I don't get to play the game I paid them $90 for. Because I have to sit through this and now talk about this. I'm going to be a little bit cranky about it. I don't want to see it anymore. Not all the time.
I mean, in their defense, we have, what, about less than a week left, and they're going to, like, drop the whole thing.
No, they don't. Remember what those bastards did last year? At the end of the month, they said, you know what? We like this pink shit so much that we're going to keep doing this going all the way into next year. And they literally kept it that way. Yeah, they extended it. They extended something that's a month. They took liberties to just do something like that. It's like, I just don't want to hear about it anymore. You know, I don't care. They need to stop that. Maybe if it wasn't for the show, I wouldn't watch it live and I would just fast forward.
Yeah. No, I'd still watch it live, but I would get up and walk out of the room.
Yeah, I didn't really pay too much attention. I just noticed there were a lot of people there, so I looked up and saw them swaying, and it was like, oh, Jesus Christ.
I'm not going to lie. I think that segment did put me to sleep.
Yeah, well, I drank a Red Bull right after that segment. So, you know, I was right there with you, man.
I definitely dozed up and I woke up about part way through the like the entrances were already done and the match was already going.
Oh man, it is crazy. It is totally crazy. But what are you gonna do, right?
Grin and bear it for now.
For now, but isn't it weird? Like if you asked us in the late 90s if we would be watching the same wrestling product and they'd all be in the ring, you know, doing that entire thing, holding hands and
you'd be like, what the fuck are you talking about? Look at what we're watching right now.
Yeah, like it's really, they're going to lose their edge that way. You can't lose your edge. Make silent donations, you know, do all of that shit. You know what those companies need? They don't need your support. They need your money.
They need your money. Yeah. Just like you know? How, you know, like John Cena does the Make-A-Wish, but then like Dean Ambrose does the Make-A-Wishes also. And then Titus O'Neil does them and everybody does these make like CM Punk used to do them too, but you didn't hear about it all the time. You know, you can do that also. You guys can make the donations and do whatever charity work you want to do and not make a whole segment on your show out of it.
Yep. Just quietly write them a check. Give them all of those big bucks. You think that them holding hands on Raw is really going to help? No. Write them a check out of your money. Tax deductible. Write them a check and send them on their way. We don't need like constant stuff trying to squeeze money. Take some of that WWE 2K16 money and give it to them. You know, you got money coming out and take some of those $9.99 subscriptions they were all giving. But just don't constantly put it in our face. You know,
yeah, because it's like, I get you're helping out a cause, but I mean, when you break it down, you're kind of being assholes about it. It's like, hey, look at this good thing we're doing. Do your shit silently.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to be insensitive about it, but I'm actually seeing more of that than the wrestling sometimes.
Yeah, we're not saying fuck the whole cause of trying to find the cure for cancer and like fuck Connor and his death and whatnot. Like we sympathize with these people. But like my whole thing is just like stay classy and just like don't mention it. It's just like when you see somebody walking down the street and their wallet falls out of their pocket, you have that moment where you can be a douchebag and take their money and just be like, hey, I'm going to lunch on me for everyone. Or you can grab their wallet and say, hey, you dropped your wallet and give it to them. You're not going to go to all your friends and be like, hey, guess what I did today? Somebody dropped their wallet and I gave it back to them. Doesn't that make me a great person? No, like do that, WWE.
WWE would take your money and invest it.
Just do your good deed and just like leave it alone. I mean, if somebody wants to mention it, if it pops up on the news or whatever, and be like, hey, WWE just gave $1.5 million to help the fight for the cure for cancer, like do that.
Yeah, it's really the company, like I said, as much as I like WWE, the hokiness is really starting to put me off to it. Anyway, without stinking this up anymore, talking about that, the main event was the Fatal 4-Way Ziggler, Reigns, Del Rio, and Owens.
It was a clusterfuck. I mean, it wasn't bad. Like, it wasn't like the Dudleys match the night before, but it was a clusterfuck. And honestly, it went like how I said I thought it was going to go, where you knew the two guys that already had championships weren't going to win the match. I honestly wanted, I wanted Ziggler to win it just to see him in the main event spot again, but it went to Reigns.
He went over with the Superman punch and spear. Like, if that's a big spoiler, right? Like, what else would,
surprise,
what else would he do?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it was a very physical match, though.
He didn't bust out that 450 splash this week. Tune in next week.
Yeah, to everyone's credit, this was a very physical match. The crowd was very into it. It was a white-hot crowd for this. I think people there felt like they got their money's worth.
Not just for the main event. Throughout the whole show, the crowd was, like, really into it.
Yeah, they really were. Really were. Very impressive. Very good crowd overall. Very good match. Good Raw overall, man. I don't have many complaints. I'd like to see where everything's going before I could really decide if I think it was worth the setup.
Yeah, yeah. Because there's a couple of things that just had me scratching my head. But, I mean, WWE, they're at where they're at because they do know what they're doing. So, like I said before in the past, I wasn't keen on the New Day. And look at us now. We love those guys. So, let's give them a chance and let them tell their story.
Yeah, pretty much. Good week in wrestling, though, right?
Mm-hmm.
More to enjoy it and less to complain about.
Well, like I said, I don't watch TNA anymore, so. Like, unless you tell me there's, like, something that I had to, like, something so ridiculous happened and I had to watch it, or, like, a pay-per-view comes up, I don't watch that stuff.
Nah, dude, you know I didn't even bring up, I'm behind on Impact, I didn't watch any of that this week.
We'll leave it that way.
Yeah, there wasn't really much news. They're staying quiet. Maybe this is the beginning of what we said, them just slowly disappearing into the night. Doing like the Family Matters mom and going upstairs and never coming back down.
No, that wasn't the mom. That was
the
Judy.
Sister, yeah. They're gonna, that's what it's gonna be. TNA's gonna get Judied. It'll be interesting. But yeah, we're going to wrap this up now. We're going to go play WWE 2K16. If I'm in the mood, we'll start live Twitch streaming it. Saving the videos, importing them to YouTube, telling you guys all about our experiences and stuff. Halo 5 also on the way. Lots of cool stuff in the future. More shows, more team-ups, more mixed matches. All the great stuff. And next week, of course, we'll be here to find out whether they tell us that Glenn's dead or not. I don't think they will. I'm hearing it's going to be a 90-minute Morgan special, is the rumor going around.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I did hear that, too.
Yeah, so maybe next week. Who knows? But either way, we will be here. On that note, we are out of here.
See ya.